Welcome aboard. It is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Justin Kaufman,
yes.
In with us again this
Good
afternoon.
To see you. What a beautiful afternoon here.
It is. Park. You were just remarking yesterday you could barely see out the windows here at our Wacker Drive in the River kind of location, and today it just looks stunning.
What a a strange weather time. Obviously, Chicago and the state of Illinois, this area being the wettest on record or this month of May. Mm-hmm. But to think yesterday and the day before, there were moments where there were clouds and fog and whipping rain right in front of what I'm looking at, and today the pirate ship from Navy Pier is out there full, and all the tourist
architectural tours
they're
are
all
going
full.
Strong.
Like, there is just it looks like it's summer in Chicago from our vantage point right here.
It's a nice view, to be sure. Coming up on the program, we're going to talk to Ben Bradley from WGN TV. We got Alderman Riley here. Ooh. So much to talk to him about. Even veteran City Hall. Yeah. Reporters are John Cass, for instance, wrote a column about it today, and so many others are just remarking they've never quite seen what we saw yesterday with Mayor Lightfoot starting out in this way and facing off with Burke, was certainly sending a message to council and moving forward her priorities to be a citizen first agenda and mm-hmm. reform. And, you know, that was a big moment. It was a big moment.
Alderman Riley, I can't wait to talk with him. You know, his role has increased under Mayor Lightfoot. It'll mm-hmm. be interesting to see, as a veteran alderman of downtown Chicago, the business community lives in his ward and works in his ward. And there's a lot of people that want to make sure that culture is preserved. Lots to talk to Alderman Riley about today. And to just ask him about his eyewitness view of the shit, the knockdown.
Front row seat to a moment in history at City Council, for sure. Plus, his district's already dealt with this 1% restaurant tax because he's in the downtown district. It extended roughly downtown area into Lincoln Park. The thought was all the conventioneers, they come into town and they eat downtown. They go to the steakhouses, they go here. But now, Lori Healy, the head of McPeer, is making the argument to Springfield, no, they go everywhere. They're out into the neighborhoods, and so we should put this 1% tax on it. But we're going to talk about that a little bit because you're hearing some pushback from neighborhoods with mom and pop restaurants.
I don't know about you, Anna, but I, from here on out, I'm going to Indiana for restaurants.
Really?
I'm just going to get out.
You got one in mind over there?
Because
I haven't
been to a ton. I'm just going off in different states, just like for gas, for cigarettes, and now for restaurants.
Just all your commerce. You leave the state for that. Okay, well, that's one way to do it. But we're not sure this restaurant tax is passing yet. It seemed to reach a little bit of our roadblock today. We've also going to talk to the founder of Bet Chicago. What's going on with gambling in the state of Illinois? This seemed like it was on the fast track to getting done this legislative session. We'll hear from Frank. Frank Ignatius is his name, and he knows all things about gambling legislation.
It's one of those things where we were at the beginning of this week. I think we're talking with Rick Pearson and Amanda Vinicky. We're talking about, will they get marijuana done? Well, marijuana is getting fast tracked through. Will they get graduated tax? Well, the weekend they did, and then we asked about gambling and gambling expansion and sports betting, and that's next. And so Frank will give us an update on whether or not we're going to see be able to bet willy nilly on any sports event in the state of Illinois, and if there will be a gazillion casinos.
Right. Casinos get the green light or not. And tomorrow is the end of the legislative session, so it seems like there might be a lot of activity. And, of course, we'll keep an eye on everything going on and let you know about that. You heard about the R. Kelly. New charges for R. Kelly just announced in the last, 20 minutes or so.
It used to be new albums with him. Now it's just new charges.
Oh, my gosh. And 11 new charges. It's
he's dropping new charges on Tuesday.
Oh, it's getting ugly. And so 11 new counts on top of the 10 sex assault charges he already faced. Yeah. So that's going on in the news. What else we have? Oh, Richard Roper will be here previewing. I cannot wait to hear more about Rocket Man, the Elton John movie. It just I was automatically interested in the subject matter.
Like it, yeah.
But it just I want to hear this that seems like it might
be. Were you clamoring for an Elton John biopic?
I think he's such an uber talented individual. I mean, just one
life,
of those interesting life story, and it just feels like if they weave the music that we love so much in with the story, it could be a pretty powerful movie.
There's a
and it seems to be pretty graphic. In
they
terms
showed
of
the
not
trailer before Avengers Endgame,
right?
They had it on there.
It's
and there's
been
a line,
out for a while.
Yeah, and they had a line in the script of something like, where he's like, you got to stop being who you want to be and to be the man that you want to be, or whatever it was, something like that, something philosophical
something like that.
To Elton John from his friend. And then in Avengers Endgame, there was a line that was really similar. There was like one with, I think it was Captain America or Iron Man, who's like, you need to stop being who you are to be the man you can become. I was like, did anyone coordinate So we don't have the same lines from the Elton John biopic that are in the movie I'm about to see. Like, I was kind of annoyed by it. It kind of grabbed me, and I'm like, why am I thinking of Elton John?
Those two movies? They shouldn't be borrowing lines from each other.
That's my point. Like, don't, if they are, maybe don't put them in the same, I don't know, screening? Just thought. I was annoyed by it because it took me out of this moment. I was like, oh, I can't believe I'm in this moment. I'm in Avengers Endgame. Oh, Elton John.
I also heard that Taron in Rocket Man says, I am Iron Man. Yes. It's the weirdest thing.
I gotta look for that. This is so weird. And then, Lauren, since you spoke up, you must be interested in the new Disney whole Star Wars thing.
Oh, of course. I wish, you know, I had an excuse to go.
Yeah.
I feel like I would be the weirdo if I went by myself just to check
you're
it
that
out.
Person.
Oh, no, I think there'll be plenty of people going by themselves.
Most people
going to Star Wars fan base.
That's how expensive it is, right?
So you can actually fly, what, the Han Solo Millennium Falcon is the thing I've seen about.
Like, it's a ride?
It's a ride, but like you get to pilot it if you're lucky enough to get in the pilot seat or else you're operating the controls and it looks like it and it supposedly feels like it.
Oh, so it's like waiting in line to get the front row on a roller coaster.
Yes, totally. That's what it seems like. And I guess it's pretty spectacular from what I'm seeing. So it's the largest expansion in Disney history for a single event type of thing. And it's all Star Wars, $1 billion of Star Wars stuff.
They're going to do so well there.
The headline that was just a MarketWatch headline said, be ready for, brace yourself for $200 lightsabers. $42 cocktails.
Is that how much they are?
$42 cocktails.
Don't they have the blue milk? I saw the blue milk.
Ugh.
And lines starting at 4 a.m. in the morning.
You got to wait a little while to get out there. You do. That's but you know what? If you're a solo rider, Lauren, you get to kind of hop the line, right? Isn't that what kind of a strategy at Disney?
That is true.
And the other, this is also great. If you stay longer, it's a four-hour reservation for the park. Like, that's what you get, 4 hours to be in there. If you stay longer, they probably got it figured out with, like, your little pass or whatever.
They strike you down
Disney,
with a lightsaber?
Disney employees dressed as stormtroopers will escort you out.
People would love that. You know everyone's going to do that just to get that experience.
Take my picture.
Look, I'm getting escorted out right now with my stormtroopers. Anyway, a lot coming up on the program, but we're going to break here, find out what's happening at the bottom of the hour of the news, and then talk to Ben Bradley over at Bradley Place and see what's happening on WGN-TV. Let's check in with Kim Gordon.
And Chicago police have released the documents in the case of Empire actor Jesse Smollett.
This week on Chicago's Best, it's crispy, savory, and oh so perfect. It should be its own food group. It's Chicago's Best Bacon, Sunday night at 10, WGN-TV.
We mentioned the R. Kelly charges being handed down. 11 new counts of sexual assault. That's some breaking news this afternoon. But also this afternoon, I'm sure the folks at WGN-TV are looking through a lot of documents right now as Chicago police have released a bunch of documents, 400 pages, I guess it is, about Jussie Smollett, the police files on the Jussie Smollett case. Ben Bradley joining us from Bradley Place. Hey, Ben.
Yeah. Well, we see him.
We
but
see
I don't
him.
Hear
He's
him.
Here. Ben.
Nope. Okay.
Oh, Ben.
All right, we'll figure that out.
One
second. Jeff's coming in to figure out.
He's coming to figure it out. So some nuggets from the Jussie Smollett document dump. And again, this is just released. So reporters at all the stations, including right here, are looking through everything. That one of the nuggets so far, Ola Osundairo, the brothers asked, was ordered to punch him because he didn't trust the other brother to pull the punches. And during the stage attack, the police say that the brother rubbed his knuckles on Smollett's face to try to bruise him and look like he was roughed up. So that's what I got. Ben Bradley, you got something for us about this? Still can't hear him.
Say this about the Jussie Smollett. I mean, obviously, there'll be the dump, and then there's a lot about the subpoena. I was thinking about it today. This may be a great business opportunity for entrepreneurs to do a Jussie Smollett tour. So you could take a bus, not unlike the Seinfeld tour. And
or the mobster tour.
Yeah, you could go to the subway that he bought the subway at. You could possibly...
It's open late.
Yeah,
late at night, so that could be the last stop at the end.
Streeterville right there and see where it actually happened. You go up to the Crafty Beaver.
Yep.
You could do a lot.
Come into
so
our studio and look down upon the alley that was actually the attack... allegedly happened.
Try to pick out which surveillance camera is not working at the time.
Exactly.
As you said, finish it all up with a great Subway sandwich. I think maybe that was one thing we learned from that 400-page document dump from Chicago Police. One of our producers, Danielle, points out that the sandwich of choice for Mr. Smollett that evening, tuna.
Tuna sandwich.
At 2 a.m., is tuna your choice for a sandwich?
I like tuna sandwiches at Subway.
But 2 a.m., I don't know. I'd be wondering when that tuna was made.
Well, you can ask that question at any point, I suppose.
Yes.
But I do the bowl, though. I go full.
Good to know. Good to know.
So you guys are looking through all these
documents. Yeah, so 400 pages. I mean, what this is Chicago police kind of responding to a whole series of Freedom of Information Act requests. And then you remember this whole hiccup when Mr. Smollett suddenly and surprisingly had the charges against him dropped and the case was sealed.
Of course.
And so now it's that we're going back, things are getting unsealed, which is why we're getting this kind of drip, drip of documents. 400 pages came out today. These are the police reports, witness interviews. It really kind of goes to the heart of the investigation. You can see, you know, from the first moments, the first police interviews with Jussie Smollett, what he said, what those around him said. And then you can, as you get further and further into the pile, you read along as Chicago police detectives begin to find and investigate, you know, things that they found suspicious about Mr. Smollett's story.
Mm-hmm.
You can read about the detectives, you know, going everywhere, looking for surveillance video of the incident, going to cell phone stores, going to find the place where items that were used in the attack were allegedly purchased by the Osandero brothers. So it's really, it's a 400-page, and we haven't gotten through all of it yet, you know, page-by-page account of this investigation and how Chicago police went from viewing Jussie Smollett as a victim to suspecting that he was a liar.
Yeah, it's interesting because remember the argument was they wanted to keep everything sealed. This seemed like the effort was initially to make this all sort of kind of go under the radar. I don't know why anyone in office thought that that could happen, but the emergency hearing that he had, the sort of the sealing of the court records, the immediate expungement of his record,
mm-hmm.
and then this call by his attorneys later that he should have all of this remain private because he wanted privacy was important to him.
But
and the judge said,
yeah, the judge was
you haven't acted like
to,
that.
Yeah, the judge was responding to attorneys from WGN and other Chicago media outlets who said, well, hold on. This guy can't claim he wants privacy now. He stood there and did a press conference in the lobby of the Cook County Courthouse at 26 in California.
He went on GMA.
Yeah, where he declared he was innocent. And this whole process had determined he was innocent. You know, I just can't help but going back to that day at the courthouse.
Right.
Forgetting, you know, all of Mr. Smollett's sordid stories. But what I can't for the life of me understand is why the seasoned prosecutors in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office didn't just require Jussie Smollett to allocute, to take responsibility.
Right.
For all the media attention it's received, this was a nothing case, right? He wasn't going to prison.
No.
This was a guy without a criminal record that even if he was found guilty of the charges that were filed against him, this was going to be a fine and some sort of community service. Well, he wanted this to go away as much as the state's attorney's office wanted it to go away.
But he also wanted it to be extremely public. That was part of the act of this whole thing. He didn't achieve his goal unless everybody knew about this horrible hate crime that had been occurred, and he slammed our city, and he drew up, like, fanned the flames of race relations in this city, and then this whole thing with the state's attorney's office not necessarily being forthcoming with everything, it just sort of, it never felt right to anyone. And I felt like even though it could have been a nothing crime, it took on a life of its own. And Jussie himself helped with that by going on Good Morning America, by being so public about what had happened to him, what a victim he was. And because of that, you're right, I think the city people here would have been happy if he had gotten up and said, look, I'm sorry for the shame I caused to your city and the reputation and that kind of thing. That would have gone a long way.
And even if he was unwilling to do that, because, you know, maybe he's innocent, maybe he was unwilling to admit fault, even if he was unwilling to do that, still the handling of the case by the state's attorney's office, you know, as I said, if they had just waited 6 months, let the legal system run its course, you know, then the prosecutors could say, hey, you know, we went for a guilty verdict. We either got one or we didn't. Yeah, he's not going to do prison time, but we did our job, you know, and then wipe their hands of it and move on. But because of it, you've seen this really stain Kim Fox's reputation in the work of her office. And it's fascinating because you have another equally high profile case, though much serious, more serious charges against R. Kelly.
Right.
And, you know, in just within the last hour, we had those 11 new indictments first reported by the Tribune, 11 new charges, sex abuse, sex assault against R. Kelly. There's some question about, we're still gathering information about, you know, whether one of the counts may just be a re-indictment of an old charge, whether these actually involve new alleged victims or are simply recharging the four alleged victims that were were the alleged victims in the charges
in the
that came out
charges.
In February. But, you know, again, you've got two very high-profile cases, two cases involving celebrity, but two cases on kind of the opposite ends of the legal spectrum. Mm-hmm. And the state's attorney is moving, you know, full force, fast and furious against R. Kelly. You know, what he got hit with today is a Class X felony.
Right.
That's about as close to as serious of a charge as murder as you get mm-hmm. in the Cook County criminal court system.
Things are ramping up against him in terms of prosecutors building their case. He's got a court appearance June 6th, so mm-hmm. He's got a lot to face here. Do we know if these new counts involve underage alleged victims?
We don't, because we have not seen a reading of the indictment yet. These were just filed in the Tribune to their credit. You saw it pop in the system, but we're all trying to get our hands on the actual documents and get a better understanding of what these new charges in the R. Kelly case relate to. But it is fascinating to me when you think about how the R. Kelly case came back into the Cook County court system. You know, you had, gosh, how long has it been now? 15, 20 years since he stood trial and beat the charges against him. And
even though there was videotaped evidence, supposedly, of an alleged crime.
And you have in the charges filed in February against R. Kelly, one of the alleged victims was supposedly a teenager during the first trial who had gone out to the courthouse enamored by R. Kelly's celebrity to meet him. And they struck up a relationship. So it's fascinating. And then you have at least some of the victims in the current cases against R. Kelly referred to the state's attorney's office by Michael Avenatti of Stormy Daniels fame.
You can't make this up.
Who's now facing his own charges.
His own indictment and a lot of charges.
Yeah, so this is just, you know, people talk about fake news. And let me tell you, if we tried our hardest,
you couldn't
make it up.
And
you wouldn't believe it if we did. I mean, if you had said all of the ways in which the tangled web has been woven across the Cook County Criminal Courts building at 26 in Cal, you wouldn't believe it, would you?
You totally wouldn't. And to think that it was sort of a Lifetime movie that summed up some of the victim statements, really. The
people who were saying, harnessed years and years.
Right. It seemed like it might have gone away had it not been for that documentary. Brought a new light to people had said had happened in the past. And kind of brought a lot of people together saying the same thing about charges against him. And this is where we are today, where he's facing 11 new counts on top of the 10 other accounts. All right, what else is coming up on the WGN TV News
at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10? 4, 5, 6, 9, 10. Our political reporter, Shimon Bradley, is still down in Springfield, which I hear is lovely this time of the year.
Yes.
He says recreational marijuana, one step closer to reality in Illinois. Looks like it passed through the state Senate with some interesting little tweaks to it, namely how much a person can have, but also the whole criminal side. And that is coming with, will the governor pardon some people? The governor may be required to pardon some people who have previous convictions. It's been talked about in the form of expungements before. So an ability, a criminal justice component as well as a legalization component. So not only are they going forward with recreational marijuana, but also looking back at people who have no other cases, violent cases against them, but were previously charged with possession of small amounts of marijuana. And then there's been this question, what happens if your workplace doesn't allow marijuana and drug tests you for some reason? Well, if recreational marijuana is legal in Illinois, how does that impact the workplace? There was a tweak to the bill that's being moved through now that allows, I believe, in places of employment to maintain zero tolerance policies.
Interesting.
So
I know the sheriff's organizations, the unions were fighting against this because they were like, how do we police this? How do we know that someone's under the influence? When we pull them over, we don't really have the proper testing ability at this point. We have the drunk driving tests, but we don't have the under the influence of marijuana tests.
And that's where they can look to some other states like Colorado that has worked at finding, essentially a breathalyzer for marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
How widespread, how much it's been rolled out, I don't know. Yeah, I think the whole issue is it'll end up being, well, how inebriated is this person?
Right.
You know, how under the influence are they? And just like with alcohol, there are varying stages of it.
All right, we'll be watching that. I know you will be too. Thank you, Ben Bradley. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you then.
Time for the news, sponsored by AppleChevy.com. Here's Kim Gordon. Music to the ears of Alderman Brendan Riley. He's heard a thing or two about this Bucket Boy music from his constituents. We have Alderman Brendan Riley here, the official alderman for the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis. Justin Kaufman is here. We want to get to the street musicians in a little bit, but I first want to ask you, Alderman Riley, President Pro Tem of the City Council, congratulations.
Thank you.
About the first City Council meeting for our new mayor and the showdown between sort of the old guard, Alderman Burke, and the new mayor, and what we saw there, and it seemed like a moment in history for Chicago. And I want to ask you, what message you think, what do you draw from that, and what should we all draw from that?
I think to borrow a baseball analogy, I thought that was a very well-thrown brushback pitch by the mayor. And I think she's the first mayor in 50 years to do that.
Longest serving, most powerful alderman for so long, and still he sort of, you know, sort of brought up like a Robert's Rule of Order thing to kind of interrupt the flow of things. And she struck back at him pretty hard, saying, "When I want to hear from you, I'll call on you." Have you ever heard that type of exchange with Alderman Burke?
No, I haven't. And, you know, we've got a very different kind of mayor now. And it was in full display yesterday. You know, she's been having some difficulty with Alderman Burke. There's been rumors at City Hall that he was working to put together the loyal opposition, all these sorts of things. And she needed to make a statement, I think, to set the tone for the next 4 years and to establish herself as the one who's going to be running City Council.
There was talk going into that meeting that there would be some resistance to her committee chairs, to her whole agenda, and there would be some sort of council wars, potentially, and allies lining up against this mayor. You didn't see that.
No, and I don't think you're going to see that happen. I think she's done a good job reaching out to members of the City Council. Obviously, it's going to take her some more time to get to know us better. But again, I think that so far, I've been very impressed with how Mayor Lightfoot has been handling all of this.
We so many great stories about when Mayor Emanuel took over and he had meetings with the aldermen to sort of set the tone of what he wanted. In your early days with Mayor Lightfoot, what have the conversations been like? That, I mean, your meetings and what she expects from you as and your role at City Council, but also just what you expect from her.
What's really refreshing with this mayor is that she wants the City Council to be in a more effective body and a better partner in governance. And so there's been a lot of rebalancing of committee budgets. We've had very substantive conversations about what should these committee staff be doing. And for a long, long time, folks that worked on these committees were connected in one way or another. They weren't necessarily subject matter experts. And Mayor Lightfoot wants these committee staffs to be filled with professionals who can help us as a council make better decisions and look at best practices in other cities and maybe replicate some of those things here. Today, we don't have that kind of substantive help. And so that's something that she's already helping with. In my role as President Pro Tem, for example, the Legislative Reference Bureau is under me. This is a body that is supposed to be drafting all the legislation for members of the City Council. For years, no one used that office because they didn't have faith in the quality of the work product. I want to professionalize that office and bring in talented young lawyers to do good work for us.
And use gender-neutral pronouns.
Of course, that's important to Chairman Burke.
We didn't know that until just yesterday, but apparently it is.
Yeah, but I mean, and it's not just Legislative Reference Bureau, the Budget Committee, having actual appropriations analysts who are spending the entire year looking at departmental budgets and looking for efficiencies and better ways of doing business. These are the kinds of things the mayor wants our council to have so we can be better partners for her.
She's big on transparency, streaming the committee meetings so that everyone can access them on the city website. I don't know that anyone would, but it's at least the idea of that sort of helps boost some sort of understanding that people are watching.
Well, the streaming the committee hearings, that was actually an initiative that Alderman Smith and I pushed forward a few months ago. It was in the last few months of the Emanuel administration. It was amazing the amount of pushback we got from the old guard loyalists about televising or at least broadcasting these committee hearings. We had to use parliamentary procedure to push that vote through. So I'm glad that this mayor is embracing the new ordinance, and she'll be funding the technology we need to make that happen.
There was a great article in ProPublica that McDumpke did and the fine people working over there about what happens in these committee meetings that we're not even privy to, that were a lot of it was closed door,
That's right.
Of it was real rudimentary stuff, and a lot of stuff that we would, as taxpayers, go, wait a second, what are we doing here? So it is a very big story that these are going to be streamed.
Yeah, that is true transparency, and I think if the general public were tuning into these committee hearings, I'm hoping at least members of these committees would show up on time, participate in debate, actually vote with a quorum, the things taxpayers are looking for, right? So I'm hoping it'll at least improve attendance and the substance of the committee hearing, but also it gives people a chance from work or at home, if they want to, and not everyone's going to want to, tune in on a particular issue that's important to them.
What about aldermanic prerogative? Because that was something her very first day in office, hours after her inauguration, she started to, she had an executive order starting to limit the powers of aldermen, and now she's talking about zoning. Doesn't belong in the hands. Now, it doesn't belong in the hands of individuals. Aldermen, that you can't have 50 different sets of rules. The alderman pushback, as I've heard, is that we know what's going on in our ward, we know what's right for our ward, and we know what our citizens, we're most in touch with the people of our ward.
Yeah.
Is there a balance there? Something's going to be struck there? Because city council, ultimately, you have to vote on this.
That's right. I mean, zoning is mostly covered by ordinances that we pass through committee and by the city council. All the big skyscrapers downtown are regulated by their own custom-tailored zoning, which is an ordinance. So taking that us out of that process, I think, would be difficult. I agree with Mayor Lightfoot that there's a lot of room for reform and limiting, I think, some aldermanic power that's been abused over the years. I'm all for that. But I'll need to better understand mechanically how she would go about separating aldermen from the zoning process. You're right. Each ward handles zoning differently. Some aldermen deputize a citizens committee to vote yes or no on projects. I don't. Downtown here, we host big town hall meetings. 900 to 1,000 people show up and fill a ballroom to look at these plans. And we sit through 3-4 hour meetings just taking notes, taking down concerns about different aspects of these proposals. There's a lot of give and take, and of course, a lot of negotiating goes on after those big public meetings to get these projects right. But if you look at all the open green space along the river, by River Point and the big Tuning Fork building, those parks didn't happen by mistake. Those parks were built by those developers because I negotiated across the table from them and made those demands.
You wouldn't be able to do that in a new era?
Well, again, it depends on, you know, what flavor of prerogative reform we're looking at when it comes to zoning. But if it were the most extreme form, I wouldn't really have a reason to be hosting a big community meeting to present projects and to negotiate if some bureaucrat in City Hall is going to make the decision for the neighborhood. And so that is a particular issue I think is going to require a little bit more conversation.
You're a regular on the show. You've been on. It's amazing to see how the 42nd Ward has changed in the last 10 years. It's become a residential area to a vantage point that we're at, where you can used to be all office buildings and people would leave. This is now every other building around here is residential. Does that change your job? Meaning that it used to be to make sure that the business community and these skyscrapers were taken care of. Now you have residents. Now you have people that want quality of life and bike paths.
They don't want bikes on the riverwalk. Either. They're
like
telling
that, right?
You that because they're getting mowed over.
That's true. They are. No, that's a big part of my job. And in a lot of cases, when you're negotiating a big complex development, some of the community benefits actually help us address quality of life concerns in the neighborhood. I always look at this as obviously we want to continue to promote economic development and build our city, literally, expand the tax base. That's great, too. But these developers, they have a vested interest in the neighborhood being successful because they're investing hundreds of millions of dollars in this new building. So, yeah, they want to sit down and help me solve traffic problems, create new green space. Their tenants will want that, too. So it's not all, you know, dictatorial. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. It's helping the developer understand this is good for everybody, including you. And then, again, depending on the scope and size of the project, they have more discretionary money built into their budget to help deliver things like parks and new sidewalks and things like that.
Ultimately, the mayor, what she's trying to do, and I think she has citizens on her side when she says this and when she attempts to do this, as she attempts to do this, is to eliminate opportunities for public politicians and public figures to profit from their role. And so that's what it seems like she's trying to do with some of these proposals. Can you really do that? Can you ever accomplish that in Chicago?
Look, I think it's worth trying. Public figures shouldn't profit from their jobs. We work for you. And a number of my colleagues have outside employment, and in some cases, it's in direct conflict with their duties as aldermen.
Right.
So I'm all for...
Should they be full-time jobs?
Sorry?
Should they be full-time jobs?
They could be. I think in some case you'd have to then look at compensation and all that. No one wants to give a politician a raise, right? And so that's kind of the trade-off. But I think it is reasonable to limit the kinds of work aldermen do. That's the deal. You want to run for this position? Fine. These are the things you can't do as an alderman because it's going to get you in trouble. It's going to take you off course. Right. So I'm all for ratcheting that down big time.
Right.
But just taking away aldermanic decision making in key processes, I don't know that that solves the problem. It may, in fact, create other unintended problems. But I'm committed to working with this mayor to do the very best I can to help her advance her ethics agenda.
Alderman Riley, will you hang on just for a minute here?
Sure.
We're going to break for a second, and then I want to ask you about a couple of things. You've got some limits on street music or musicians you're trying to propose.
Who's
and then also
complaining about the Bucket Boys?
Who isn't?
Hang on. And then we also want to talk restaurant tax, which your district is already dealing with, but now there's this vast expansion that's being proposed. We're going to talk about that. Alderman Brendan Riley is here. Let's check in with Kim Gordon, though, find out what's coming up top of the hour in the news.
R&B singer R. Kelly facing new sex-related charges in one of the cases against him.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Rose off today. We've got Justin Kaufman in studio. We've got Alderman Brendan Riley in studio.
That's
and this
him.
Is a familiar sound in your...
Was that
you?
Playing.
Can you play the buckets?
Alderman Riley,
how
right
are
now.
You on the buckets, Alderman
I
Riley?
Brought my bongos. And I'm not bad, am I?
Nice. So they call them street musicians. It's kind of a loosely held term, I would say. But they're banging the buckets, and the people in your ward, they're not loving it, especially late at night.
Well, no. And it's, you know, to be honest, it's actually even more an office worker issue.
Oh.
Our friends at Crane Chicago Business, they're frequent callers to complain. They're trying to put it together a newspaper, and they've got the buckets downstairs. Yes, this is an issue that we literally have received thousands of complaints about.
But for years, this is such a cyclical story.
Yeah.
This is a story I've
been around
here
for
daily.
Years.
This is something that's like you're worried about those buckets bouncing off those buildings
it
and
amplifies.
People complaining about it for years.
Look, I mean, say what you want about my predecessor, Alderman Nateris.
We will.
We do.
he worked on this issue 15 years before I showed up. So this thing is not new, and it drives people crazy having to listen to percussive instruments 7-8 hours in a row.
So what's the plan now? You want to limit the hours of the day they can do this? You limit the locations? How do you solve the problem?
So we introduced an ordinance a year ago that was much broader. And it touched every type of street musician. And after talking with the street performer community and some of their attorneys, they have attorneys, by the way, it became clear we were, I think, trying to swat a fly with a nuclear bomb. And the intent here is not to take music off the streets of Chicago. It is a part of our cultural fabric for sure.
Yep.
We're talking very specifically about folks whose performance includes nonstop percussion in violation of the city's noise ordinance that already exists. We have decibel limits that are allowed for good reason. And then those folks who decide to crank up to 10 the amplifier on the sidewalk.
Do they do that with the buckets?
With the buckets. No. They do that with electric guitars and these sorts of things.
But that is a good idea.
Just point that out there.
Yeah.
In
watch.
The ether.
Tomorrow now we're going to have amplified buckets.
Riley.
Yeah, thanks. But, you know, we narrowed the ordinance to focus on those two things. So this does not hurt the person who's playing the acoustic guitar or the person who's playing the cello or the violin, and those people exist.
Sure.
I did that when I was in high school. I played on the street.
I think it's wonderful. But what we're looking to do is limit the hours to the times of day actually when the most people are on the street. During the lunch hours between 11 and 1 o'clock, that's when most of the performers' customers are on the sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the evening commute. Huge volumes of pedestrians walking by these folks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also dual tracking this and trying to get them additional platform space at the CTA. That's how New York City handles their street performers. They have them in their stations, in their subway stations. That's where they belong. And frankly, that's where the performers want to be.
With all the people.
They get new customers every 2 minutes.
Right.
And so they love that idea, the volume.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get creative. The purpose here is not to hurt They're performers. We don't want to economically impair them. But there has to be a balance. People need to be productive in their offices. People need to be able to enjoy their homes. And this is a serious impediment.
Again, it has to do with the fact that the demographics have shifted downtown. It used to be at 5 o'clock, the Bucket Boys would pack up. No one was down here.
Right.
Now, especially in the summer, with the Riverwalk and everywhere else, there are so many people downtown
everywhere.
That they're like, hey, double shift.
We're a 24-hour destination now.
Right.
And you're right. 15 years ago, that was not the case.
Alderman Riley, we're running out of time here.
Sure.
I do want to ask you about this new restaurant tax that's proposed. Springfield's looking at it. It looked like it was picking up a lot of steam. They're going to broaden the boundaries from, it's really downtown in your district now, stems over to Lincoln Park, but they wanted to go all the way to Irving Park and then all the way to 55th Street east on the east part of the city and even pretty big boundaries here into Western Avenue. The mayor has just come out and said she doesn't like it because she thinks it's going to kill small businesses, people who are mom-and-pop restaurateurs on the north side, on the south side. Mm-hmm. This is not good for them.
I agree with the mayor 150%. She's right. Downtown has been burdened by that tax for a long time. The idea of extending that into the neighborhoods is a really, really big mistake. And if you look at the revenue it generates, it's not a lot of extra revenue coming out of the neighborhoods. And frankly, businesses that are operating in the neighborhoods have thinner margins than the businesses downtown do in some cases. So every little bit of tax hurts those folks disproportionately. I think that was the right move by the mayor to reject that. I think McCormick Place will need to get creative and find a different way to fund the bonds for their project. But small business owners in Chicago have taken a beating. And I think it's great that Mayor Lightfoot's standing up for them.
And you hear that the margins in businesses for like restaurants, for smaller owners, you're not talking about big-time investors. You're talking about mom-and-pop kind of restaurants. The margins are pretty small.
3% margins? I mean, that's tight. And so, every tax really cuts into that. So I think she made the right choice.
Alderman Riley? Good to see you,
great
as always,
you.
The official alderman for the Rocon Show with Anna DeVellantis, President Pro Tem Riley.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing your buckets, too.
That was awesome. Next time, different instrument, okay? Thank you.
Thanks.
We've got coming up the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Kim Gordon, on WGN Radio in 2 minutes.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. Never count your money when you're sitting.
It's the Rocon Show with me, Anna DeVellantis. Justin Kaufman in studio today as Ro is off. And we're talking gambling. It's down to the last 2 days of the legislative session in Springfield. And will we have a gambling bill that passes? Mm. Will there be a major expansion?
We're on the edge of our seat, Anna.
I know.
I had to come in studio for this one.
I'm glad you did, Kevin Powell. We've got Frank Ignatius, the founder of BetChicago.com. He knows about what's what. If you were a gambling man, Frank, would you say that we're going to be close or we're going to get this done this legislative session? What would you say the chances are for us?
I am overwhelmingly a gambling man. And yes, I think it's going to pass. All the information we're getting sounds like things are trending very positive. And although we can never say with any certainty, things look good right now.
By the end of the session, tomorrow.
Well, it has to be, by midnight tomorrow.
That's a deadline. That's really close.
I ran into Mr. Khan last night, and the first thing we really talked about in depth was this gambling bill, because Ro and I have been having Frank on now for about a year, on the show with you for about a year and a half now, and we've been waiting for this day. I guess what was the most contentious point this week about the gambling bill and between the representatives?
Well, there was a big fight this week, and it was between one of the casinos and then the daily fantasy companies, DraftKings and FanDuel, and they were going back and forth over the bad actor clause, and I really think that probably delayed us 3 or 4 days. Maybe we'd be done by now if that dust-up didn't occur.
Right.
But it appears as though that's been cleared up, and they've made their peace with each other, and that's why it's smooth sailing towards the bill happening.
It seems like there's kind of two parts here. There's the expansion of actual casinos, the brick and mortar, including a Chicago casino, which the Mayor Lightfoot is in favor of, the governor is, and then other parts of the state as well. Then there's the video gaming and the sports betting, the other piece. Is that where we've got a little bit more of some things to iron out?
Yeah, that's
right?
What got so scary for us is because we had almost overwhelming 100% support for sports betting, and it was a very clean bill that was going to pass very easily. And then the bigger gaming bill, which has a long history of not working out, got attached to it. So the reason I say scary is because we got included and entangled with a bill that's got a history of not passing. So there were some nervous moments there, but it appears like the whole thing's going to go through. So we're cautiously optimistic.
You know, it's interesting because we've talked about this for so many years in Illinois, and to think that it's really a reality, well, what is that going to mean? How is that going to affect people listening right now when they say, oh, okay, well, what does that mean for me? Why do I care?
You know, you're so right, especially this week, I think because of how newsworthy it's been. I played golf with a friend of mine by the name of Josh today, and he's a young guy. He's into sports. He's a golfer. You know, came in fourth in his club championship. He's a really sports-minded guy, but he's not so inclined to go find a bookmaker. He's not going to go find an illegal guy to go do this. He's highly, highly interested in betting, but he's not going to go over the line. So he's just one of hundreds of examples of people who've reached out to us to say, I'm ready. You know, I'm Joe, Illinois citizen that wants in on this, but I don't want to break the law and I don't want to send money offshore. I just want it to be a regular part of my normal Illinois day. And, you know, Josh
that
is
makes
a perfect
a lot
example
of sense.
Of it.
A lot of sense.
You know, Frank, you've seen a lot when we talk about the bad actors and the national players of the FanDuels and the DraftKings and things like that. They have done some service to the betting industry in the sense that they have made it very popular and mainstream. There's, you know, fantasy football has moved on to that model. Does that help when it comes to sports betting being expanded and this idea that people are now familiar with betting online and not necessarily having to go to a bookie and things like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that helped. As a nation, we sort of dipped our toe in the water, right? We learned how to use a mobile app and how to use the outcome of a sporting event to establish whether we won or lost something. I don't know that fantasy is going to survive going into the future. Like, for instance, Europe, which is sports crazy, has no fantasy market whatsoever.
Huh.
And I think that's because they've always had the ability to make a bet. So why use the half measure of a fantasy game when you can go and make a, you know, a full bet? So I'm wondering if fantasy was just a gateway to our sports betting, and it might not be so popular because we're chasing the bet, not necessarily the format.
Right, and just the fact that what you pointed out before, the legal part of it, that you feel like you're just doing something that does, you know, just feels like it's easy to do and you don't have to have a guy. You don't have to have a guy to do it. It just is, you know, simple.
Yeah, it's just another thing to do on your phone.
Right.
Okay, so speaking of phone, I know that was brought up, the mobile wagering. If this gets voted in, everything that we're anticipating tomorrow, when will I be able to make a bet on my phone?
So one of the big issues, and I think it's fair to say this is the last issue to be discussed in Springfield, is this proposed 540-day ban on mobile betting, which is 18 months of sort of a freeze-out where we'll start with brick-and-mortar sports betting and we'll delay mobile until 18 months later.
Why would they do that?
Boy, that's a good question.
talking about Springfield here, right?
It first arose as a penalty box issue for some of those bad actors.
Right.
And I think there was a little bit of a temper tantrum, so to speak, that said, all right, if we're going to make them wait 18 months, let's just make everybody wait 18 months, which is not really a logical way to do it.
Sure.
But as of now, that's still being debated. So my hope is that when the bill is presented and passed tomorrow, it's going to contain no 18-month delay on mobile betting. So to answer your question, it's either going to be day one.
Or 18 months.
Or day 541.
We all have our fingers crossed that it's day one.
Put both of those dates on your calendar.
Yes, I
think. Just go right in there, 18 months from today, and then tomorrow.
Let's say I want to do a mobile wager, but I also want to go to a brick-and-mortar situation. What will be, if someone does want to do that, how will all of this play out? Where will someone be able to go? How will they be able to make a bet at a brick and mortar?
So the most recent versions of the bill have said casinos and racetracks. Mm. So, you know, your local Illinois casino or racetrack, or I think this would be the best place to go, will be the racetrack off-track betting locations, which are a little more...
they've got everything in place anyway.
They do, and they're geographically attractive, and they get closer to more households in Illinois than our casinos. So, yeah, I think OTBs would be a great place to, you know, pop in, a lot of parking, make a quick bet, and get out without walking into a big casino.
And outside of the casinos, I think we had talked about this before, the amount of license that will be – how many locations will be able to do that or present that opportunity?
Yeah, again, I'm referring to the most recent version of the bill, and there will be another one coming out later today, but – there were casinos, racetracks, and there was actually provisions for our stadiums. So there was a spot for seven facilities that housed 20,000 seats or more. So Wrigley Field, Guaranteed Rate Field, United Center, presumably. So they would be able to put sports books in those facilities as well.
Gotcha.
When it comes to the casinos, I know the mayor is on board. Mayor Lightfoot would love to see a Chicago casino. She said all the business is going to Indiana right now. It's going elsewhere. I know we've got one in the suburb, but she believes it really will help us. And then there are others planned for Danville, Rockford, Williamson County, and southern Illinois, and the south suburbs as well. So quite a few. There's another argument that says that aren't they going to start to cannibalize each other? Are there that is or is it just going to open up a flood of new people? Say, hey, it's right by my house. I'm going to go do it.
I referred to being scared earlier, and that was a scary part of the larger gaming bill is casinos were overwhelmingly behind sports betting, but because we added this extra layer, now if you're a casino, you're like, well, the sports betting is going to bring me 5% hold on that piece of the pie, but what will those additional casinos cost me in the long run? So that's the politics, right? We're weighing sports betting legislation versus additional casino legislation. And that's the part that gets a little dicey.
What time will we know if this passes? Well, I got to get the champagne on ice.
What time?
You know, I'm embarrassed to say I've never watched any sort of law be made in Illinois.
You know what time this would go, Justin?
They have
Justin,
until
you
Friday
can spend
till
some time.
Midnight. Is okay. That's, and to be fair, and reading up on this today, it's all kind of manufactured deadlines. They could just say, you know, we didn't get to it, and we'll come back to it in a month. The obviously the votes change. I think there's a 3/5 majority. There's a different the way that it has to play out. But they could, I hate to tell everybody in the room, they could say, you know what, let's all hit the boats. This was fun. We'll come back in a month and do it. But
is it literally midnight, or could it go till 2 o'clock in the morning?
I think it's midnight. I think the idea is that the end of the month, which would be tomorrow, May 31st at 00.
And if it's past midnight, use a little whiteout, right? Just to change. Yeah, right.
I want to take a just nap tomorrow that. Afternoon in case I have to stay up that late. So I just want to know how late I might be staying up.
I read this whole thing, same with marijuana, that they really want to get it done. Their deadlines are kind of manufactured. They really want to get it done by tomorrow because they're afraid if they step away,
right,
that some of the lawmakers that they had votes on would go, home and everyone told me not to vote for this. So they're trying to get it done as fast as possible so that lawmakers don't have cold feet.
But midnight sounds like that's our target time,
yeah,
right?
Okay. Midnight. All right. Yeah, hopefully before. That's the idea. That they like to gavel out. They
Frank,
like
you going to be down there tomorrow?
I am not. I'm going to be watching from afar.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you have to have people there to make sure no legislators leave the building and got to stay
hey,
in
where
there.
Hey, where are you going?
Go,
come on, everybody.
Stay.
Get in there.
Stay in there.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, you talk about the license, and it's obviously all about casinos and racetracks at this point. Will you see a moment in Illinois where startups get an opportunity, brick-and-mortar startups or mobile startups get an opportunity to get a piece of the pie?
Well, I mean, you're looking at a guy who had a startup. I mean, BetChicago is an Illinois company, started with Illinois investors. So we were told many times, this is not for you, and you won't break through in this business. And we've made it this far, and you know, we feel like we have a pathway to doing business in Illinois. We actually have a deal in Indiana and Colorado as well. But yeah, why not? I mean, there's room for innovation, I believe, in this business. And you referenced the fantasy sports people earlier. If you could figure out a better mousetrap, a more interesting way to offer wagering, I think there's probably an opportunity for you. Just like, you know, casinos have traditionally had craps and blackjack, but if you've been to Vegas or one of the boats recently, you'll see some different crazy games out there or different interpretations of blackjack with side bets and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it probably just as far as your imagination can go. If you can come up with a new twist on it, why not?
Well, I love that stuff because you mentioned Europe and you can bet on anything. What wristband a player is going to wear, what socks. I mean, I don't know, just anything, or what the coach is going to wear. If Belichick's going to wear his hoodie, is it going to be up or down? I mean, could you envision that will happen here with this new kind of opening up of gambling laws?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, there's certain things that you have to be cautious about because Belichick could tell somebody which hat or what color he's going to wear. Yeah, they like to keep it to you know, literally games of chance kind of things. But, yeah, why not? If there's a market for that and we can control it in some way, yeah, why not?
Interesting.
At the end of the day, what I find interesting about it is that, you know, if there is going to be this 540-day moratorium on mobile, it seems that more and more people are, because of the fantasy games, but just about the games that we play on our phones, are very comfortable with putting money into a bank or a little account and being able to use that way. They're not necessarily comfortable with driving up to Rivers Casino or one of the casinos and going in and doing that. So how do you deal with that part? Because it seems like it's right at your fingertips, but it's the lawmakers that are essentially saying, well, let's slow your roll.
Yeah, this is a... this is a concern of ours, because you had mentioned, when do I get to bet on my phone? And I feel like if we pass this bill tomorrow and it doesn't include mobile, the excitement level will last for 5 seconds, and then you'll say, well, wait a second, I'm just going to stay with my black market guy.
Right, yeah, right.
So, mm-hmm. you know, it would be similar to like prohibition being repealed and then saying you can only drink, you know, in a certain spot on a certain time of day. We need full mobile. So I think the celebration of legalized sports betting will be a little tempered if it doesn't include mobile, because, you know, we're here in Chicago. If you wanted to bet on a Cubs game tonight, literally, how would you get to a facility in time to make a bet?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you wanted to bet the second half of the basketball game tonight. You're not going to get out of your house and drive to a casino to make a second half play. So there's sports betting is mobile betting.
Plus, it could be intimidating for someone who maybe is interested to walk into a brick and mortar, to go up to a kiosk and actually make a bet. I think if you have that opportunity to kind of learn it via mobile wagering, I think that, to your point, brings the interest to a different point.
Frank, do you have just a second? Because we want to break here. I want to ask you one question about the demographics of gambling and who's what you see growing, and what maybe with this new legislation, when it passes potentially tomorrow by midnight, what you'll see we might envision happening here in the state of Illinois. Our guest is Frank Ignatius, founder of BetChicago.com. We're going to check in with Kim Gordon, see what's coming up in the news at the bottom of the hour.
Alderman Ed Burke named as a defendant in a second corruption case.
Traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago, 10:30 p.m., WGN-TV.
Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Justin Kaufman in today. Frank Ignatius is our guest of BetChicago.com. Quickly, as we wait for this midnight deadline, and you say it's likely to pass the new gambling legislation, Frank, what's happening with the demographics? Like, who's being drawn to gambling that hasn't before, and what do you see happening when this seemingly will pass?
I think there's a lot of groups you could point to. I think millennials in general aren't from a generation where there were bookies in their corner bar. So I think that generation for sure. I think women will find the opportunity to play mobily much safer, much more accessible. So I think those are the most two underrepresented groups in sports betting. I think those will be easy. I think on day one you'll get a lot of women and a lot of millennials.
Awesome stuff. Thank you so much, Frank. Frank Ignatius, BetChicago.com. We'll be waiting to see what happens. Kevin's got it on his calendar. We're going to have a big celebration here at the Rokan Show if this passes. And we'll see what happens in Springfield tomorrow. Thank you, Frank.
Thanks for having me.
It is time for the news, and for that we head over to Kim Gordon. It's sponsored by Marquette Bank. You just heard in Kim's news there that there are some new indictments against Alderman Ed Burke and his top political aide that the feds
what
have.
What a week. What a week for Ed Burke, huh?
Yesterday, the smackdown at city council. Today, new charges, some of them related to that Burger King restaurant and what the feds call a shakedown over permits and things like that. But
yesterday,
today, more things named, including the possible development of the old post office, that he had some involvement with that, but that he was recorded by Alderman A., defined as Alderman Danny Solis, while there was a deal trying to be cut there as well.
I can just imagine Ed Burke getting home and being like last night, oh, this week cannot get any worse. Good thing that council meeting is over.
I'm going to guess he probably had a little inkling.
It's only Wednesday?
Things might have been happening. There were a lot of people talking about this by the end of the week that there might be something more coming. And certainly when it first broke, even that one charge about the Burger King restaurant, a lot of people said this is just the beginning of what the feds have. Remember, they have hours and hours of recordings by Solis. They've got recordings, the overhears on Alderman Burke and his staffers.
So Alderman Burke has, and this is a story as old as time. Everyone in Chicago knew that there were conflicts of interest involved, that a lot of times
absolutely
he would be doing stuff for clients that had city business and so forth. So it's not surprising some of these indictments come down that are finally getting at the root of some of that conflict. But these are hilarious. I obviously it's federal corruption, and I get it, but listen to this one. Okay, this is from Jason Meisner's piece in the Tribune. And he's a great reporter, and he's working right now. But this is one of the... So one of them is the old post office, which has been an eyesore and trouble since the thing went under. And you now know why, because Ed Burke's putting muscle on it. But listen to this one. Mm-hmm. All right. The charges also allege that Burke threatened to oppose an increase in the admission fee for a Chicago museum after the museum failed to respond to the alderman's inquiry about an internship for a child of a friend.
Oh, gee.
So let me get this straight. Ed Burke is like, you know what? I know somebody over at the blank museum. Let me give him a call. He calls. Nobody answers, or he doesn't get a response. He's like, you know what? They can't get an increase in their admission. I'm Ed Burke. You don't mess with me. Like, that's essentially what that was, right? That's the dumbest indictment of all time.
It speaks to the core of what Mayor Lightfoot talks about, the whole pay-for-play politics and the system that's been in place for so long. And these are exactly what she's trying to do, eliminate the aldermanic prerogative, that you have control over permits and things like that. You're trading jobs
for... Yeah, but this is beyond that, right? This is Ed Burke just being like, I'm Ed Burke. Who are you? this is what he's doing. He's walking into places, essentially. Do you not know who I am?
Longest serving alderman, 50 years in city council, and once the most powerful before he was stripped of his finance chair and the disability, the workman's comp, chairmanship of $100 million in city funds. That no longer is under his watch.
Right, there's another one is about this is all, of course, this is all from a wiretap.
This is all just breaking right now, right? We should say, so we're just getting detail by detail on what's in this indictment.
Well, okay. Justin, you said a wiretap. It's over 9,000 wiretaps.
It's amazing. It's almost
a lot,
like,
of wiretaps.
Alderman Ed Burke got a new cell phone and he didn't realize it was delivered by the FBI. And he's like, oh, a free new cell phone. Let me use it, because it's all these calls. And I thought the number one thing for corrupt aldermen was no phones, right?
The flip phone.
Where's his burner phone? Okay, so the wiretap on Burke's cell phone allegedly captured Burke leaning on it. This is from Jason Meisner's piece. Leaning on a Texas-based executive to hire his private law firm in exchange for help with permits to renovate the Burger King, right? We know that story.
Right.
But listen, when the businessman didn't seem to be cooperating, Burke plotted with a ward staffer on how to play hardball, holding up permits and sending a city worker to the site to harass them when unwarranted citations, according to the charges. So again, picture that. A guy coming down going, I don't know. This looks. I don't know about this. I don't know about this paint color. That's a $50 fine. You don't want to play with that bird?
It's unbelievable, and I think all of us know that this kind of thing occurs. Yeah. But I have a feeling this is the tip of the iceberg and what the feds are going to release.
Oh my gosh.
When you think about what Kim just said, what you said, 9,000 wiretaps. Is that ours or?
It just says over 9,700 wiretaps.
So there's a chance, Kim, that they've been asking for an extension because they said it's ongoing, the investigation, we're still culling through this stuff. So there's a chance that these indictments will just be rolled out weekly.
Well, him being named as a defendant essentially starts the clock for the trial.
Yes.
So now it starts ticking.
Yes.
But they can come, you're right, they're absolutely true. They can come forward with a lot more. Here's a quote from Jason Meisner. So, quote from Burke on one of those wiretaps, so did we land the tuna? Burke was recorded telling Alderman Daniel Solis in relation to the post office deal.
They're working in code.
They're
working in code. I'm being, you know, light with the corruption charges here, and it's political corruption. It's terrible, and I get it. We should be serious about it. But these are so two-bit crimes. These are so, like, shaking down a Burger King. Holding up an admission fee because you couldn't get on the line with someone to get your friend's kid an internship. This is small level stuff that is really painting a picture of an old alderman who a dinosaur who used to do this stuff in the 60s and 70s and probably taught that way, and everybody loved it, and this is what you did as an alderman, and time has moved on past him. To think about these are small potatoes, Anna.
It seems as if this kind of stuff we've all known has happened in the city for years. As you say, it sort of seems like a status quo. We all knew it. We didn't like it as citizens, but you knew that's what happened. And to see that the feds are cracking down on someone of his stature, it shows it's a new day, especially with this new mayor.
It would make me worry if I were an alderman. I would worry because...
Well, they're all worried right now because what's on those tapes? Who's been recorded?
It becomes this game, and I know that in Ed Burke's case, and I'm not necessarily defending Alderman Burke, but it becomes this game of politicizing or criminalizing politics in this way that Ed Burke has become the most powerful alderman by being corrupt in this way of being able to wield his power and say, if you don't listen to me, I can make your life miserable. That's essentially what he's doing, is mob tactics. But this has always been part and parcel with politics. You see it happening in Washington, D.C. I mean, Trump does it out front. Like he just says he's going to withhold stuff if he doesn't get his way. So the question I have is, who did he rankle at the feds to be able to come down this hard on him for an internship? Right.
Well, I think there's a lot more.
Right. There's probably a lot more. But you're seeing what I think is a criminalizing of Chicago politics, which is probably overdue. But I'm not sure that this rises to Ed Burke bilked millions, or the idea of the what we should be concerned about when it comes to large rate corruption.
The other big question here is how far reaching is this going to be? How many others will be ensnared in this type of a federal investigation when they've been working on it for this long? They kept renewing those wiretaps, and they must have had reason. You have to have reason when you go to the courts to renew a wiretap. You can't just say, you know, we want to listen in a little longer. There has to be reason. Details that show that we are likely to find another criminal or another crime, and they kept renewing it over and over and over again. They do. So these details, I just stink. In the indictment also, they talk about the work for the old post office that Burke and Solis were trying to wedge themselves in the middle of. Burke's firm wanted the legal work. Didn't seem like the developer who was cooperating with the feds did not want to cooperate with them, did not want to hire him. The cash register has not rung yet, Solis says, according to the indictment, and they're not fond of the way they've been acting. As far as I'm concerned, they can go F themselves. And so it kind of paints the picture of how they handled this developer and not hiring his law firm. So
the concept that you're getting private business and that's what's at the root of your corruption is ridiculous. That to me is a criminal offense. The idea of wielding your power to essentially put some pressure on a organization because you're not getting your way, that is also corruption, but it's a smaller rate. So I know it's a big headline to be like, Burke, more, Burke, we hate Burke, and everyone going crazy for it. But if that is all they've added, the expansion of it, that we're talking about friend's kid that didn't get to the internship, so Ed Burke's using a little political muscle. I'm not sure it's that big of a deal.
I think those are just little details, and I think first of all, this indictment is a 19-count indictment. We're still working through it. As we said, it is breaking news, so Kim's going to track that. We're going to track that. We'll continue to bring you all the details there. We also are going to come back, and we're going to talk about this whole conversation that's taking place about netting around Major League Baseball around the field after what happened in Houston at Minute Maid Stadium, and that just a sad, tragic situation, very emotional. Will there be any changes? We're going to talk about that, but first let's check in with Kim Gordon, see what's happening top of the hour in the news here on WGN Radio.
New charges today in two high-profile Chicago cases.
It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Justin Kaufman is in. We should all be keeping Ro in our thoughts.
Yes.
As his father has passed away, which is why he's had the extended absence this week, so tough week for him, and we I said
thinking
a little
about
prayer.
You, Ro, that's a awful thing, but he's with family, and he gets a chance to take some time off, and we'll hold it down until he comes back.
We'll hear from him soon. We wanted to, switching gears here a little bit, we want to talk about the calls for nets around the entire field in Major League Baseball. People, after that incident that just happened in Houston with Albert Elmora and his, gosh, you could see how distraught he was after he knew that his foul ball had hit that poor little four-year-old girl in the stands. It was devastating. It was hard to watch. And now people are saying, what is the deal? And I guess, Kev, my question to you is, does every ballpark get to do what they want, what they see fit, or is there a Major League Baseball rule?
Well, the rule changed a couple years ago because a similar situation happened with Todd Frazier, who had struck a child with basically the same sort of hit as Albert Elmora, a hard hit ball down the third base line that went into the stands. And so the start of last year, everybody had to have the nets to the end of the dugout. So everybody in baseball right now is required to have nets to the end of the dugout. obviously today the consensus, and even after after the game yesterday for the Cubs, everybody, at least that's really spoken about it, players, coaches, managers, are all for going further down the line, whether that's all the way to the foul pole line, mm-hmm. or at least, I don't know where you would put the marker. I think a lot of people are just sort of saying, why not just take it all the way down to the foul pole line?
Are there people like baseball purists here that are fighting this because they think
baseball purists fight everything and they get stuck in the old baseball world? Last time I checked, Anna, and I was talking about this with John Hansen earlier, if somebody offered you front row tickets behind the dugout, you going to turn those down because there's a net in front of you? I don't think so.
Turn those down.
Those are some of the highest priced tickets, even with a net in front of you.
The Rickets sit over there.
Look, Major League Baseball attendance is down for the fourth straight year. I think they have bigger fish to fry over if a net going down to the foul pole line is going to detract people from going to a baseball game.
Yeah. It's a traditionalist sport, and they like foul balls. People like foul balls. And
you're still going to get foul balls.
But you're not if the net is going to block. There's going to be a lot less opportunities for those balls.
I guess I just don't get it. What is the argument about why it hasn't gone to the foul pole? Why hasn't that happened already?
I think what Justin said is just the purest thing. People, I guess, are worried about it taking away from the game, which it really doesn't. I'm not opposed to it going down to the foul pole line at all.
Here's what I would say to it is if that is a concern, and there's a concern by Major League Baseball that that they will lose attendance because people will feel like it affects the game.
Yeah, okay.
Why not try it? You know, they're just nets. If they try it and they feel like, oh, it's not working out, then they can go back to the drawing board and try something else. But it just seems like the safety, especially since they're really pushing this as a family-friendly game, the safety of every year we are getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 different people who are hurt, really hurt from line drive.
And to hear Albert Almora, who's a parent himself of two young children, talk about it and said he looked over and he locked in on this little girl who thankfully was crying. She was obviously able to cry, and from all accounts right now we're hearing from out of Houston that they haven't given her, that I've seen, her official condition, but it sounds like she's going to be okay. But when you hear Almora speak of it after, you can see the impact on the player is even hard to take.
It's hard.
It just seems like an easy fix to avoid situations like this. And look, the argument that some people are making, well, it's because people are buried in their phones and people aren't paying attention to the game. Back in my day, I paid attention to the game. Look, even if you're dialed into the game, you can look away for a split second. And you know how fast these balls are coming off the bat? 100 miles per hour, 110 miles per hour, 115 miles per hour. You're telling me some guy who's, even if you're watching the game, the ball's hit at you, you put your hands out. We saw it last year with a fan at the Sox game was on the front row. Mm-hmm. A ball bounced foul. He had his hands to get it, went through his hands because it was coming off the bat 100 miles per hour, hit him in the face, and I think it broke his nose.
Ouch.
There is something to be said about that, and that would be the pushback on the traditionalists, that the game of baseball, especially at the major league level, has gotten really fast, and it's gotten really much more powerful than it's ever been. I think that the exit velocity and things like that, Kev, you can back me up on this, I think it's since like 2017, it's gone astronomical. They're throwing 100 miles and they're hitting it 150, or 110, or 120, but the point being, they're not soft liners off the bat. Everything in technology is making the game much faster.
Yeah, we have a little piece of that sound from Albert Almora shortly after that incident happened.
That's all I really could control.
Yeah, he said he was speechless. He didn't, God willing, I'll have a relationship with that girl in years to come, because he obviously took it really to heart. You could see how horribly felt about it.
And also, it's not, I get it. I get that there's an initial reaction that the player, hits a fan, especially a young little girl like that. But I feel bad for Albert Almora, because that's the game.
Don't you? I do too. Yeah, like, he's just trying to hit as hard as he can.
If there are nets, then that's what the pitcher threw the ball inside on that pitch to get him to swing and miss or to foul the ball off. And I don't understand how it's directly on. I mean, I get the emotional toll on the player, but it's ridiculous that the MLB is not protecting these players, that they somehow have some emotional tie to playing the game and hurting a fan. That's crazy.
You wouldn't want them to be hesitant because they think, what if I foul and I hit somebody? I mean, you think that you have that on your conscience as you're playing
crazy,
the game.
Right?
It feels like you could eliminate that whole piece of things.
That's what I was thinking. It's almost like PTSD. Like, if you get up there and then you can't hit because you're scared you're going to hurt someone.
Like, how does he do now moving forward? Does that have any impact on him as a player? It obviously had a tremendous impact on him if you saw how he reacted immediately. I mean, didn't he have to walk over to, like, someone kind of comforted him right after it happened? Security guard?
I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen a player emotionally break down like that. Albert Almora Jr. Hugged a security guard, and then they got him in the dugout where he was bawling. He wasn't just tearing up. He was bawling. And I don't know if that's what should be on the player's shoulders for hitting a foul ball into the stands.
Do you think something will happen now, Kev? I mean,
it feels
like an incident like this.
I mean, people were calling for it right after the Todd Frazier thing, and then changes were made. I don't know how quickly, if you're going to do this in season, or if it's the start of next year. That's what I'm interested to see. But changes will come.
Yeah. You know, the thing is how many times is it going to happen before something really, really terrible happens?
Yeah, I think the one argument people make is that, okay, if you look at the amount of foul balls that go into the stands, it's probably the teeniest, tiny percentage. But look at the impact that teeny, tiny percentage has.
I think it was Sunday Night Baseball. I forgot. I saw the piece that one of the announcers had said, and I guess it's true. I never really thought about it. There are more balls hit foul in Major League Baseball in percentage than fair, obviously, and that it's going up. But the point being that there's more activity in the stands than there is on the field in any given game.
Yeah. It's I thought it was so tough to watch, and then to see Almora respond in that way, almost feeling like that could have been my kid. You know, that's what I saw there. Like, gosh, I mean,
it's not fair for the fan either to be sitting there spending that much money on a first or a third base side, and bring your daughter and
bring the whole family out.
Ads say, come on, bring your first daughter's experience, the whole bit.
I mean, you kind of wince every time you see a foul ball now lined into the seats in that sort of angle. I mean, obviously it's a lot different than a lazy foul ball back into the upper deck, but that's just a whole different.
Yeah, totally.
Put a net up, and the players should be robots. There we go. I got it.
Or else wear face masks. Yeah, can you start wearing face masks to the game? Coming up here, we've got a top 5 of 5 you will not believe. We also, there's going to be a chance for you to qualify for a trip to 2 to see the Blackhawks take on the Flyers in the Czech Republic, that Pucks and Prague giveaway. You win, and then you win a chance to qualify for that trip, but you win some other prizes too today. And Richard Roper is going to be here. 3 movies he's going to take a look at. Rocket Man, the Elton John movie, which has gotten a lot of publicity. Want to see how good that is. Mm-hmm. And Tomorrow Man, that's a conspiracy theory movie about the man who believes the end of the world is coming. So you got that one. And then the Godzilla, King of the Monsters. You interested in that one? None of those yet? Well, we'll hear from Richard Roper and see if we should be more interested
in those kinds of things.
There's
nothing wrong with Godzilla, I guess, but you can see one Godzilla in the movie.
Maybe this one's special.
Maybe it's different, yeah.
Richard Roper will tell us about that. Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio wants to send you on a Blackhawks getaway 4-2 in Europe. Listen to win your way to Pucks in Prague weekday mornings at 7:40 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news, it's sponsored by Comcast Business. Here's Kim Gordon. It is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Justin Kaufman is in studio today. Yeah. Richard Roper is in studio today. As Ro is not in studio today, we've been keeping him in our thoughts as his dad has
passed
away. So we're thinking about you, Ro.
We're thinking of you, Ro.
And we know you'll be back soon. So
dad was a great man.
I know.
A lot of years of service to his country, the military, and sending our best, our love to Ro. Always good to see Anna. And
yes.
JK, I usually just see in the hallway, but every once in a while we get a chance to be on the microphones together.
And
it's nice.
This feels like a Friday before a holiday weekend, because you think about all of the breaking news that has happened in the last couple hours here in Chicago. We started the show with the R. Kelly and the 11 new counts against him, right?
That's a shame.
Moved on, really, no one expected that. Jussie Smollett with the police file dump and the 400-plus files that now reporters everywhere are trying to get through and see what's in them to see if there's anything there.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, he did not have a tuna salad sandwich. That was for another friend, the one that survived the attack. See? Clearing up something. He had a salad.
Fake news. Yeah. I love the shot on ABC7 when they show our friend Chuck Gowdy reading the report. It's like Silver Fox in session. Do not enter this room.
Gowdy.
You know? It's so great.
And there's some juicy stuff in there, so we'll, Kim's following that. We're tracking that. And then the feds indicted Alderman Burke and his top aide on those new charges, extorting businesses, shaking down the developer of the old post office. So that happened.
Wow.
And we haven't even talked about
like the a lot of this news took break during this time where you guys were on, which is nice when they do that. So you hate when they do the 707 thing,
right?
Or for Justin, that's fine sometimes, but then
extension 720 would pick up on that.
Yeah, it's usually a Friday night 5:30 dump. So it's nice that they did a Thursday.
That's
dump.
True.
Yeah. Nice. Thursday dump allows us to kind of get through things, and we'll pass along what we know about all of that. But we've got other things to do right now, and it is time. You know what it is? It's time for. Justin, I'm going to get it right today. I swear to God, I am. I swear to God. Here we go. Here we go. You may have to sing it. So
I might have to also say number three.
Okay.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokon Show with Anna Taplantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
You have, to have a new appreciation for Rose Fingers.
He's a master,
touch screens.
It's like it's nobody's
business.
It's like
that scene at the end of Sully when they're simulating the flight and they kept hitting the trees.
It's like, how do you do this? What do I press? Don't press that one, but I do have to press this one.
Number five.
Thank you, Orion. How did I do with that one? Pretty good. Nailed it.
Nailed it.
The White House directed the Navy to keep the name of the USS McCain warship out of sight. During President Trump's recent visit to Japan, that directive was not carried out, and President Trump claimed on Twitter he knew nothing about it. The late John McCain's daughter, Meghan McCain, we know her, on The View this morning, called that an impossibility, but also remarked that these actions by Trump create a much wider problem for the military.
You're putting people in the military in horrific situations because they're fearful of their jobs. If, God forbid, you're a sailor on this ship, you think there's going to be some kind of retribution. And I think it's horrible. I think it's bad for Americans. And I think we really have to look at the kind of culture that's being put in place. I don't blame the people in the military. I have nothing but respect for people who serve. Putting a note on this, there's a lot of criticism towards me in the media across the board of how often I speak of my father, how I grieve, how I do it publicly. But it's impossible to go through the grief process when my father, who's been dead 10 months, is constantly in the news cycle because the president is so obsessed with the fact that he's never going to be a great man like he was.
Yeah.
So it actually is a bizarre way to do this. It's a bizarre way to grieve. It's a bizarre way to say goodbye to my dad because it's so omnipresent in politics and not in a way like we're honoring him in the way that you're weaponizing his legacy in the way that you want. So I just want to say that please have a little more compassion. This is very hard.
I don't blame her for trying to defend her dad, right? I mean, you know, you think about it, it's hard to hear.
The first part of that about the military's put in harm's way, I don't know if I buy that. That's just
that piece of it.
Hyperbole.
But the second part, I mean, that's a great point about trying to mourn your father when your father is constantly being beat up on for his
and he's not here to speak up for himself.
But do you buy the president that he didn't know anything about that? Do you see that's fake news that a source came out just to embarrass him about?
It's possible because he knows so little about so many different things going on right under his feet. But it's, you know, that kind of plausible deniability. But even when he said he wasn't aware of it, he then said it was well-intentioned, as if it was a good intention and a good idea to dishonor three generations of military
and
heroes with this insane plan to put a tarp and then move a ship and then have the hats taken off. I mean, that's stuff it's a Steve Harvey memo, not a presidential edict. Jeez.
Totally true. He says, you know, it's funny because the Wall Street Journal, which broke this story, is saying that it's likely that he did not know, but you're right. Well-meaning aides tried to shield him from having to view his name.
That's not well-meaning.
It is not. Jeez. It's wrong. It's just wrong. All right, checking in.
Number four.
As he departed the White House for a trip to Colorado, President Trump made his feelings well known after special counsel Robert Mueller broke his more than 2-year silence about the Russian interference in the Mueller report and the whole 2016 election investigation into his campaign, and if the president obstructed justice as well.
Well, I think it was the same as the report. There wasn't much change. It was, to me, the same as the report. And there's no obstruction. You see what we're saying. There's no obstruction, there's no collusion, there's no nothing. It's nothing but a witch hunt. This is a witch hunt by the media and the Democrats, their partners. And it keeps going. I thought it was finished when the report was released, but it goes on. And to me, it was the same, frankly, as the report. And he said, basically, it was the same as the report.
It just kind of feels like he missed it. Like, he didn't actually see it. He's like, oh, that? No, it's the same as the report.
Exactly. And again, for those of you thinking that might be Marine One, those are actually the inner workings of the president's mind that you hear there.
You kind of do get to hear it, right? Yeah. The inner monologue just comes all out.
He seems, I mean, for as many people who, you know, are following the president and supporting the president, you have to recognize just how calculated and orchestrated. He uses the same three words, mm-hmm. no obstruction, no collusion. It's a witch hunt, witch hunt. He says it over and over to the point of any objective person looking is like, that seems like you're reaching for those words. You're on purpose saying those words over and over for a reason. Not necessarily to exonerate yourself, but because you know that you're trying to sell something.
He's a marketing genius.
But it works with this. Did you see Get Out? There's the little the tea thing and the spoon. Every time she wanted to, like, you know, basically, that's how he plays his bass.
We also have another little more audio here from the president, so you can listen into this. Took offense to the notion he colluded with the foreign country, with Russia, to win the White House.
No, Russia did not help me get elected. You know who got me elected? You know who got me elected? I got me elected. Russia didn't help me at all. Russia, if anything, I think helped the other side. What you ought to ask is this. Do you think the media helped Hillary Clinton get elected? She didn't make it. But you take a look at collusion between Hillary Clinton and the media. You take a look at collusion between Hillary Clinton and Russia. She had more to do in the campaign with Russia than I did. I had nothing to do.
I think that when I heard that live, I thought it was a perfect opportunity to say the people elected me. But he says, I didn't.
No, he never. Yeah, but never. Never going to give anybody credit.
The American people spoke. No, I did.
This is me. It's all on me. We've got a 3 and a 2 and a 1, and we need to take a breather here. I think this is a perfect place to do it. So let's take a break right here. Check in what's coming up on the bottom of the hour, at the bottom of the hour, from Kim Gordon.
Another governor signs a restrictive abortion bill.
This week on Chicago's Best, it's crispy, savory, and oh so perfect. It should be its own food group. It's Chicago's Best Bacon, Sunday night, 10 o'clock, WGN TV.
Nice.
It is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlancis. We've got Justin Kaufman and Richard Roper in studio today, as Ro is off today, and we're keeping him in our thoughts today, as we are anticipating he'll be returning very soon. Okay. We want to give a shout out to Gail in West Chicago. She just qualified to win the Pucks in Prague trip for two to see the Blackhawks open their season. I would love to go to that game. I mean, that is like huge if you're a Hawks fan, right? Yeah. So congrats to you, Gail, and you get a prize package just for qualifying today. Very cool. So checking in at
number 3.
Here we go. Kanye West. Did you see this? Sat down for a little interview. Very, very graphic and vivid detail about what it's like to have bipolar episodes. And he complains to people who just don't get it. Made it way worse for him, he said. All the scrutiny and the way people talked about him. He opened up about his mental health struggles to David Letterman for his Netflix show, My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. And he tries to get people to imagine an injured part of the body and then transfer that concept to the brain.
I can just tell you what I'm feeling at the time. And I feel a heightened connection with the universe when I'm ramping up. It is a health issue. This is like a sprained brain, like having a sprained ankle. And if someone has a sprained ankle, you're not going to push on him more.
Right.
With us, once our brain gets to a point of spraining, people do everything to make it worse.
Wow. That is insane.
I can't disagree with that. I think that's a pretty apt analogy. I don't know, and I know it's a long interview with David Letterman, but if Kanye's getting the treatment he should be getting, that's what worries me.
You think being in the Kardashian clan may not be all that healthy for him in that situation?
I don't know. I think actually, you know, I feel like Kim is the most grounded member of that family, actually, as the years go by. But I just wonder, you know, I think what he's saying is probably true, but I don't know if he's doing what should be done or can be done. I don't know that he's not, but I think it is one of the reasons why a lot of us have kind of pulled back with the mocking sometimes, and you realize this is a guy that needs some help. And as opposed to 10 years ago, where people, I think even then, were less enlightened when Britney Spears was having her meltdown.
Right. Well, you weren't sure, as you aren't always sure with celebrities, is it something to promote? Is it something they're doing just to make a headline? But in his case, he's coming out to say, no, I'm really dealing with mental illness. And you think a guy like Kanye doing that is going to shine a light on mental illness, and, you know, maybe he'll help some people. I think that is a really revealing thing to say.
He's
an admission. to make.
And he's an eloquent and articulate guy. I've known from the get-go of his career, he has always had great things to say about the music and the message that he's putting out. He gets where it gets confused is he having a bipolar episode when he's out in front of Jimmy Kimmel? Or
Taylor Swift's trophy away.
Right. Yeah. That was not good.
That's where you
didn't like that.
Kanye West, if he just has
I would agree with that.
A bad personality.
And that doesn't help either. I think the strongest point he made, which is true though, is if someone's physically injured, nobody really makes fun of them for that. They're like, oh, I hope you get better. Feel better. How are you doing? And if someone's having mental problems, emotional issues like that, there's still a tendency for all of us, myself included, I'm certainly not above it, of, you know, sometimes to pile on and make it worse, as he said.
Right. Well, he does say some things that are just so out there, and you just wonder.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're right. Not all of it falls into that category of mental health issues. It has to do with some just kind of making a splash about things and speaking his mind. All right, Kanye. Just checking in at
number two.
Yes, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opens to the public tomorrow morning, but reporters, they got a preview of what fans can expect when they pass through the gates of Disneyland in Anaheim, California. Steve Goddard, ride project engineer with Walt Disney Imagineering. I'm sorry, I didn't know that was a thing. You're an Imagineer.
Imagineering, yes.
Of course you are. Yes, that's a job. It says the Millennium Falcon ride he helped create gave him all that he needed to feel.
We did not miss a single detail. When we started this attraction 4 or 5 years ago, we flew to Pinewood Studios in London, and we sat in this set, and we analyzed it, and we took pictures, and we planned how we could exactly recreate it for Star Wars. And this is what's in the movie is what you see here. The Falcon is a completely interactive experience. You're piloting it. You're repairing damage. You're firing the blasters. You are flying the Millennium Falcon. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Wow.
Lauren, when are you going?
Repairing damage. That's an interesting part.
They're putting you to work. The most amazing thing is it actually allows you to go back in time and remake Phantom Menace, which I think a lot of fans have been wanting for a long time.
Want that.
I'm the only person who got nauseous listening to that, just knowing that all that stuff that goes into the ride, and it's going to be one of those rides where you just move, and
the
screens around you move, and you just get rocked, and you go,
you're starting to throw up in your mouth just thinking about
new
it.
New style of roller coaster that they have created.
Millennium Falcon. Yeah. This is not a roller coaster. This is the Millennium Falcon, Justin.
Gosh.
That style.
Lauren, is this in your future?
Lauren, tell him what's what.
I hope so.
Yeah, I see you there. I see Lauren there.
I totally do. I'd like to go check it out, too. Are you kidding?
Okay, good.
We'll go together.
You can be the one to go with me.
I'll let you
pilot. You with your little Princess Leia haircuts walking through the park.
I'll Chewbacca it. Actually, what happens is if you do crash it, one of the reporters did in the test piloting, and Chewbacca took over. So that's
now,
like a backup
thing. Have the hotels opened yet? Like the Star Wars themed hotels that are going to be part of that Disney? Because it's Galaxy's Edge is part of this park.
Right.
But they're creating like you could stay at the hotels.
It's supposed to be amazing.
That's the idea that you can pick where you want to stay, meaning if you want to be a rebel or you want to be a stormtrooper, and then
cosplay.
They have a Star Wars bar?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The cantina.
That would be awesome.
The robes and all that kind of stuff are themed that way. So you can dress like a stormtrooper.
Look, if they don't miss a trick. And, you know, I give Disneyland. Disneyland,
it's so expensive.
You know, 15, 20 years ago was just a couple of teacups. It had kind of like, you know, because they had moved on to so many other projects. And they've done amazing things with it. It's really cool.
Fun for
us. We're all going.
Let's do it. Team trip. Okay, we're in.
Ro will be here by himself.
He's like, I'm
in
not
about
doing
a month.
That.
Where's everyone?
Ro won't be in on that.
He's gone.
All right, let's check in. Finally,
number one.
He's an actor. He's a politician, and now as singer and a rapper. Arnold Schwarzenegger is featured rapping, have you seen this, in a new song titled Pump It Up, the motivation song. Austrian singer Andreas Gabalier wrote, produced, and recorded the track for Arnold.
Hey, I'm Arnold Schwarzenegger, listen carefully. Dig deep down and ask yourself, who do you want to be? Not what, but who, if you believe success will come to you. Work like hell, trust yourself, and all your dreams come true. Break some rules, not the law, don't be afraid to fail. You have to think outside the box, I say no pain, no gain. I don't want to hear it can be done, give always something back. My name is Arnold.
I think that's enough, guys. Yeah. Do you want to hear a little more?
Is that really rap?
We give it that.
It's just a little speak song, spoken.
And a
spoken
word song. Right Said Fred's style to it.
It is like Right Said Fred. I'm too sexy for my
song. Thank you, Arnold.
That was number one.
We needed
okay.
to hear that. Let's wrap this thing up. Let's do it. Let's do it. We have to wrap it up, and that's that button right there.
The top five at five.
Head to the chopper!
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Richard Roper in studio today as Ro is off today. And we're reviewing some movies for this weekend, starting with one that's developed a lot of buzz, and it's Rocket Man.
Rocket Man.
Elton John, not the Kim Jong Un, the other one.
Not Little Rocket Man, the original Rocket Man. And I'm sure next week when Ro is back, we'll be able to talk about this at length, because as everybody knows, his regular listener, he likes to judge the movies on the YouTube trailers or the clips.
It's a great trailer.
He was my plus one for the screening for this, Anna. I took Ro to the actual screening. Yeah, and. And, you know, he really does have an encyclopedic knowledge of and appreciation of Elton John. And not that it's always about getting things right factually, but he did say right after the movie, man, they got so many great details right. So Taron Egerton, who is in the Secret Service, Kingsman, Golden Circle movies, and played Eddie the Eagle, actually played Eddie the Eagle in a film. The guy, remember the guy that was the guy that made the British ski jumping team and like could go like 7 feet. He's a terrific actor. Unusual casting. He's not a huge star, but maybe that's better. He definitely disappears into the role of Elton John. So Rocket Man is the story of Elton John. Here's what I loved about this movie, Anna. Unlike Bohemian Rhapsody, which was such a straightforward PG-13 watered-down biopic, this is R-rated as it should be, but it's also very stylized. Instead of just here's what happened, then this happened, then this happened, the songs of Elton John, the amazing catalog Elton John and Bernie Taupin have, they use various songs to kind of illustrate what's happening in his life.
Ooh.
And yes, that means sometimes a song will appear well before it actually appeared in real life. So for example, in a flashback scene, we see, you know, Elton John grew up as Reginald Dwight in a hardscrabble neighborhood in England. His father was a military man who literally told him that love is something he wasn't capable of. His mother was pretty tough, too. His grandmother, you know, was the only real love in the family. So in an early scene here, this is, you know, Elton John, he's just thinking about changing his name. He's in a honky-tonk in London in a flashback sequence, but they use the song Saturday Night All Right for Fighting, which really didn't come out for almost 10 years later. But here's Taron Egerton. And by the way, the difference between him and Rami Malek, too, here is he's actually playing the piano. Some help with the instrumentals. But singing. He's actually singing. Not just lip syncing. So here's Taron Egerton as Elton John in Rocket Man.
Well, I'm back pretty tight in here tonight. I'm looking for a dolly who'll see me right. Use a little muscle to get what I need. I'm a stable.
Now, what I like there is it's not an imitation. There are some numbers, like there's a moment where he sits down and sings Your Song at the family piano, and it's just stunning and beautiful, and he sounds like Elton John. Other times, you don't need to. You know, Jimmy Fox didn't sound exactly like Ray Charles. Joaquin Phoenix, you know, Johnny Cash. Yes, they did. You know, we're talking about great performances there.
Sure.
But I love the fact that this has got, I actually likened it a little bit to a movie called All That Jazz. And if people haven't seen that, they should see that, where the story is told through music. It's almost like a Broadway musical come to life, but then you've got the special effects and everything. And Bryce Dallas Howard, the wonderful actress, plays Elton John, Reginald Dwight's mother. She ages from like 22 to 75 in the movie. And we're going to talk with her tomorrow.
I can't wait. She's one of my favorite actresses.
She's just so great.
I like
she's
her
so
in everything.
That Howard family, they're nothing but trouble, right? Ron Howard, Rance
they
Howard,
a thing
Bryce
or two
Dallas
out. And
Howard.
They seem genuinely like nice people, too. I'm just that,
just
hope that
absolutely
that's the, case.
The best. And so I'm giving it 3.5 stars is the rating for Rocket Man. It's definitely one of the best pictures of the year. I think it's superior to Bohemian Rhapsody on every single level. So, and I also celebrate the filmmakers. And give them credit, you know, they talk a lot about Elton John, Reginald Dwight becoming Elton John, and Elton John coming to terms with his sexuality. And there's actually a love scene in this movie that looks like a million other love scenes you see in films, except for it's two men. And guess what? The theater didn't fall apart.
You're seeing more and more people saying that this is a superior product than Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. Bohemian Rhapsody was in the Oscar contention. Rami Malek won the Oscar.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, do you see that meaning that they automatically are going to be talking Oscars for this?
You know,
the comparisons are everywhere already.
And you know what? I try to shy away from comparing, you know, different movies, even though the Oscars do. So there's nothing wrong with it. But in this case, I'm doing it a lot because obviously the similarity of the subject matter is such, and their arcs and some of their personal life stuff and their, you know, family lives and the contribution. They're both incredible. Incredible, legendary, you know, musicians and performers. And again, this film to me is just more authentic. In fact, it's so, you know, similar. There's actually a character who's a manager of Elton John in this movie. There's a different actor who plays that character in the Bohemian Rhapsody movie because he was a manager to both Queen and Elton.
He
doesn't come off well in either one of those movies. So there you go.
Yeah.
And I think the problem, Justin and Anna, is that Bohemian Rhapsody just came out last year. And I know this is ridiculous because if it's a great performance, it should get recognized. So I don't know if it's going to get the Oscar love, even though, you know, to me, from everything, from the editing to the costumes to the special effects to the music to the performance, every single element of filmmaking from the moment, the craft services, I bet, were better on this film. It's superior in every way. It's the movie Bohemian Rhapsody should have been. So I really hope people see it. Obviously, Elton John has a huge fan base.
He does.
But I don't know. I think it'll do well. I don't think it's going to get the worldwide box office that Bohemian
has. He come out to speak about it yet?
Yes.
Elton, John?
Elton and
I know he's at the premiere. And
his lyricist, Bernie Taupin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they weren't the producers on this or anything, but obviously they used the music. They had the rights to do that. And both Elton and Bernie Taupin have said they just absolutely adore and love this film. And I think Taron Egerton and Elton John even did a number or two together at the London premiere. So that's pretty cool.
Taron Egerton said in interviews, like the only thing that Elton John told me is don't try to act and sound like him. And he said that was so hard because you're not going to try to be the parody of him or the duplicate exactly what he does. You want to give the feeling of
And
like he's pulled it off.
And I do give there's some really cool, you know, kind of dreamlike sequences. But then they also do, like, Elton John famously came to the Troubadour in Los Angeles in 1970 and played these sold out shows that turned him from a star into an American superstar. And they recreate that. And if you're an Elton John fan, you'll remember certain iconic outfits, like the sunglasses. There's more sunglasses, prescription in this movie than anything. But you see, like, the famous, remember when he wore the Dodgers number one spangly uniform for Dodger Stadium?
Oh,
and they
the
show
best.
That here. But then there's a lot of other trippy things. And they definitely get into his issues with, you know, depression and addiction and, you know, narcissism and everything else that the real Elton John went through.
The Oscar goes to Elton John for best eyewear.
If they had that category, it was like, oh my gosh. That, you know, I love the attention to detail. And again, the music is just used, I think, in a pitch perfect way.
I'm trying to think, do millennials know a lot of Elton John music? Like, it seems like he spans so many generations. And obviously, it's
absolutely
such legendary music that it survived the test of time.
And, you know, even, you know, obviously, you go back to the 90s and, you know, films like Wayne's World that, you know, well, certain songs. First of all, Lion We Will Rock King. You and We Are the Champion.
Wait, say it again. You said Lion King?
Lion King.
Exactly where I was going, Lauren. If you think of, like, Wayne's World, but then you hear, you know, Elton John with, can you feel the love tonight? I think, you know, it's just, I don't know if the interest is there. I think it's going to do well. It's such a daunting task to play a living legend.
Absolutely. You know? Very cool.
Taron Egerton is definitely up to the task. This film, for all its style and great look and music, if the lead performance doesn't work, you're sunk.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the one thing, you know, everybody agreed, and I agree, Rami Malek was really, really strong as Freddie Mercury.
But didn't sing, and Taron Egerton does.
Did not
so
sing,
what
Taron
a
does,
what a cool
yeah.
dimension to
in
this
a much
new
better
film.
Movie.
3.5 stars for that one from Richard Roper. So go see that one. You want to take a break here? Then we have what, two others, right?
We've got The Tomorrow Man with the great John Lithgow and Blythe Danner, and then finally a movie about Godzilla. We've been waiting forever
how many
for
of those
that.
Have we seen?
Does Godzilla
35
do any Elton John pieces in this one, Rich.
Does he borrow any lines from Elton John?
Is there Godzilla? Any
you know,
does he dress like him?
Yeah,
like with the flashy glasses in this
Godzilla
one?
Godzilla made the right choice. He didn't try to imitate Godzilla.
Good.
He just captures the essence of the big lizard in the water.
Okay. Well, we can't wait for that. So we're going to check in with Kim Gordon, see what's coming up top of the hour in the WGN Radio News.
While Illinois gets ready to pass recreational marijuana, one state says they have way too much.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Justin Hoffman and Richard Roper are in the studio this afternoon. And we were talking movies with Richard Roper. 3.5 stars
for Rocketman.
Check
it out at the theaters. You really will love it. If you go to a theater, it's got beautiful sound and everything. I think you'll dig the soundtrack. We also have The Tomorrow Man. Okay. And, you know, guys, first of all, it's great to see a movie with John Lithgow and Blythe Danner as the leads. You know, you just don't see a lot of movies about a couple. And so here's the setup here. It's set in an unidentified town in the Midwest. John Lithgow plays a divorcee. Blythe Danner is a... Well, I don't want to give too much about their backstories. Let's say they're both available. He's essentially one of those survivalist conspiracy theorist guys. Not so much politically, but he just thinks the end is at hand. So he's got a full shelter stocked with batteries and bottled water and all that stuff. He thinks, you know, he's on the internet chatting with people that have like-minded feelings. And she's kind of a hoarder. So they're both very eccentric and... they kind of find each other. Do we have a clip from The Tomorrow Man? Let's hear John Lithgow and the great Blythe Danner together.
You know what you said before about being on the wrong side of 60? To me, I don't think there's a wrong side of 60.
You know, I don't mind telling you that. I think you've got a real nose for this game. The way people look at things, it's all in the eyes. What kind of tuna do you prefer, generally speaking?
I guess Charlie?
Starkist, me too. Paper products?
Paper products?
Yeah, you know, toilet paper. It's important.
Oh, well, I don't really think about it. I just squeeze them.
Right. Yeah, it's all about not making things harder than they have to be. Batteries?
I know this one. Copper top.
Generic on that one, as far as I'm concerned. As long as it's alkaline. That's key.
You seem to know a lot about stuff.
Well, I do. Because I care.
We can see that.
Wow. So, you know, if you saw this lovely, you know, older couple across the hall of the diner and across the aisle, you'd think, oh, what a lovely conversation. But they're all talking, everything he's talking about is how he stocks his shelter because he thinks the world's coming to an end. And it's a really intriguing premise, and then the rails go off. And I don't want to say what happens, but the ending really ticked me off with this film. I love the two actors, but I'm giving The Tomorrow Man 2 stars, not recommending it. And it's a real shame because films like that, this, you know, are few and far between. Great actors, people that they don't
amazing
know.
Actors.
Blythe Danner is Gwyneth Paltrow's mother, and she's been acting for what, Justin, since the 70s, right?
I don't know. Sure.
I mean, long. Just say yes.
Justin, when
I say,
no.
I won't set you up here if it's Roe and Mike, but like, yes. So, yes, that's right.
I'm like, oh, geez, was
but
it
yeah,
68,
and Blythe Danner's
71?
Wonderful.
She is. She's so good. Meet the Parents, she was even good, and I love her.
She could do everything.
Comedy, everything.
But just kind of off the rails.
What
now,
a waste.
The movie that's going to make the most money is Godzilla King of the Monsters, which is sort of a spoiler alert in the title, quite frankly.
Is
this
King
is
of
the third. Yeah, I did one of those Twitter polls yesterday, guys, the day before, and I said which of these three franchises has the most entries, and I put the Bond films, Godzilla, and X-Men, and it was a very close race, but most people picked the Bond films. The 25th one is coming out. The next will be the 25th one. There have actually been 35 Godzilla films. Obviously, you know, going back to
count
the 50s.
Those, yeah.
They keep trying to redo this. The films do well. There was a 2014 one with Bryan Cranston that did very well. It was pretty well made. This is horrible, this one. Godzilla, King of the Monsters. We're going to cut right to it.
But it's still going to do well.
It's going to do well. So the setup here is it's 5 years after the events of the 2014 film. Now we know there are more than just... Godzilla's not the only one. Turns out there are all these ancient beasts that have been in this dormant kind of, you know, state for thousands of years, but the world is righting itself because man is wrecking the planet. So they're all now starting to resurface. And Godzilla, of course, according to this timeline, at least is kind of fighting for good. I don't know how Godzilla knows he's on the human side because he'll chomp a human once in a while as well. But then you got Mothra and all these other characters. And it's amazing. The cast in this movie is amazing. There's about 15... wonderful actors, you know, Ken Watanabe and Kyle Chandler and Bradley Whitford will show up. And they're all, I bet you they avoided eye contact during like lunch breaks and stuff.
We're just doing this for the dough.
But we do have in the two hour and 8 minute movie, I think it is, we did find the 30 seconds of dialogue in the film.
Good.
Holding fire. We don't know if he'll attack.
Well, he will if you keep those guns on him.
It was with the
light show.
It's an intimidation display.
Consider us very intimidated.
I like the part where they whisper so Godzilla can't hear them there. Yeah. And it's like every one of these movies where they have the beast like kind of in a state of suspended animation. And there's a bunch of henchmen around with like AK-47s and other, you know, automatic weapons. And then they're all shocked when the beast comes to life and their weapons are useless against the powers of
but
the 70-foot fire-breathing monster that could eat Daenerys' dragons for kibbles, you know. So, you know, and we get all that. People have to behave like idiots, but this is just so stupid. And then if you were disturbed by the darkness in that one battle sequence in Game of Thrones, you're going to go nuts at how dark this movie is.
Really?
And they also cut it. It's edited in a way like it's a Bourne film. All these quick close-ups of Godzilla and Mothra and the rest of them.
You mentioned the Bond films, and they're obviously, you know, there's so much love for that series. Is there that much love for Godzilla? It feels like, there were so many campy films in the 50s and 60s, and you love that.
Yeah.
As a blockbuster coming out?
You know, Justin, that's a great question, because I didn't think there was. I am wrong from what I've, you know, been hearing from millennials in the film Twitter and that, you know, they call this the monster verse. There's a whole thing where Kong, the next movie is going to be Kong from Skull Island, exists in the same world. So it's not the Marvel universe, but the Monsterverse. And a lot of the youngsters, I think the 2014 film, which was a huge hit, it resonated in a way. And I'm giving this movie 1.5 stars.
One
so you can tell I'm not
stars.
Affected by the audience. But when I saw this at a preview screening, the first time Godzilla appeared, it was like when Rocky appears in the Creed movies. Everyone applauded like crazy. And I'm like, are we applauding for the big lizard or the three-headed dragon or the moth or, you know? So, you know, I think, first of all, it's going to do very well. And internationally, of course, Godzilla, who originated in Japan, the whole backstory is he was this giant creature and radiation test, you know, H-bomb test, gave him this super strength. I think it's a disaster.
Right.
And all the actors in there spend the whole time just looking up at a green screen going, that's not possible. And it's like, well, you know it's possible. You're in a Godzilla movie.
Do you have to see the other Godzilla movies in order to appreciate
this? I think you'll be okay with this one. That is the, there we go.
But you know, it's nice you can kind of fall asleep during these movies, right? You can sort of, you just sort of get it if you're just sort of half there. Like,
we were interviewing somebody from the movie so he could have just sat and got kicked out of the junket.
Yeah,
Anna,
right.
That's the question of the year.
Write that one down. You can use it.
Yeah, is this a standalone, Richard? Or like,
it's a standalone. The questions you'd love to ask, well, you got to get kind of serious.
That's fantastic.
All right, so Godzilla gets 1.5 stars. Do not see that unless your 13-year-old nephew, in my case, will drag me to see it. Two stars for The Tomorrow Man, which is disappointing, really, for me. And then you got to go see the Elton John movie you're saying, The Rocket Man.
Yeah.
All right.
There you have it.
And we are, you know, we've got a lot trending this afternoon, a lot of breaking news.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you wonder, if you're looking at your phone, you say, okay, why is R. Kelly, Ed Burke, and Jussie Smollett all trending this afternoon?
It's because like
major news.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Oh, major news has happened on all fronts, and it ain't good. R. Kelly, new indictments. Ed Burke, new indictments. And then Jussie Smollett, of course, those 400-plus files, police files, were released, trying to shed some light. So we've been looking through all of that. We're going to have John Seidel from the Tribune talking about Alderman Burke and what's in that indictment. For his part, he's saying he never abused his position and everything in the indictment, simply not true, but a lot's in it. And he's going to break it down for us what exactly we should know about that. Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. And Rich, you're going to stick around, right? And so we've got Justin and Rich and that.
Actually have to go off to another adventure, which we can make fun of tomorrow.
Uh-oh.
On the show,
can you give us a hint of what it is?
I'll be singing on stage in Chicago. That's all I can say right now. So I apologize.
Can we get a recording of that? Are you able to get video and audio?
Why?
We have to get that.
Only, yes. It's not quite as going to be up there with our Game of Thrones song, but no. Yes, fine. I'll see if I get some audio.
Will you please? We'd like to hear
that.
I'm
just going to play you Taron Egerton.
We'll know the difference. Plus, you have a great interview tomorrow that we should tease
with Bryce
again.
Dallas Howard. Yeah, and you know, for one tomorrow, there's a couple other there's some TV offerings we can talk about too.
What do you mean
for tomorrow's show? Oh. We can talk about Big Little Lies is coming back to HBO.
Oh, I love that! Nice. I'm so excited about that.
I can give you guys a little sneak preview of season
Ooh.
Two. They added a new cast member, a kid looking for a break by the name of Meryl Streep.
She's in it now. I love that. I love that. I love that. It's such a guilty pleasure. Okay, so that and more on Richard Roper returns tomorrow for the show as Ro will
see
be off.
Justin,
see
Anna.
See you later. Thank you for that. WGN Radio wants to send you on a Blackhawks getaway for two in Europe. Listen to Win Your Way to Pucks and Prague weekday mornings at 7:40 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news, it is sponsored by, well, it's just sponsored, not sponsored, actually. It's 6 o'clock. Here's Kim Gordon. It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Justin Kaufman in studio. His Ro is off today, and yes, an indictment today for Alderman Burke and his top aide just happened this afternoon. Breaking news. We've been tracking it here at WGN Radio. But John Seidel from Sun-Times, he covers the courts and has looked at this in depth or as much as you can, given the time period since it's been released. And John, I've been following your tweets, and I mean, there are some details in here that people should know. Walk us through what you know.
Yeah, there's a lot here, and I'll stress that we're still absorbing it all. But here's here's the deal. So the new indictment is it charges Ed Burke along with a ward worker named Peter Andrews and a developer named Charles Quay. Quay's been charged before. I believe this is first for this Peter Andrews joining this situation. Burke has been charged with racketeering and bribery, and that's the key here. We also have charges against the other guys, extortion, bribery, lying to the FBI. But obviously, Burke is the center of this, and it's a racketeering indictment. It's 59 pages that I think pretty stunningly, one of the first things that I picked up on, and there is a lot, refers to the city of Chicago. You know, with racketeering, the way this works is, mm-hmm. I mean, they have an enterprise. The city of Chicago is alleged to be a criminal enterprise here that Burke used to further his alleged crimes. And there are multiple schemes here. I mean, we already know about the Burger King scheme that he was charged with in January, and this thing with Quay that came down last month. But the big new one deals with his efforts to steer business to his private law firm by the developer that was working on the old main post office. Throughout that, this alleges that Burke was working with Alderman Solis to try and steer that business to him. And as we all know, it turned out that Solis was a federal informant recording conversations with Burke. And now we're finally seeing transcripts of some of these comments that Burke made. And I'm just flipping through
the
here.
The cash Burke register told, has not rung yet is one that I've seen in one of your tweets here that says Burke told
to
Solis
too,
that.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was talking about doing stuff for this company. So the cash register is not rung yet. Later on, he asked Solis, "So did we land the tuna?" That's another one. He said he was a believer in sharing the wealth, and at one point he finally just let his anger boil over. He said they can go F themselves, and Solis said that they were going to try and get their TIF funding on the finance committee agenda, and Burke basically said good luck. And again, still going through this, but the upshot is that Burke found out, or at least it was suggested that Burke's firm was going to be finally hired by this company, and so the TIF funding sailed through. And we also have this scheme apparently with the Field Museum where he was trying to land somebody. And actually what was going on was that they were looking to raise their admission fees. And Burke called and complained that you never got back to me about this internship I wanted for a child of a friend of mine. Lo and behold, he got an email saying that person would be considered for a full-time job. And I guess the person looked into it and didn't pursue it in the end after all anyway.
Uncle Ed did all that work for you.
Yeah, no, didn't even want it. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that the feds, they had asked for extensions and they had and continued the extensions. Is this because it's taking a while to go through all these transcripts, to go through these different wiretaps that are ranging in over 9,000 wiretaps? Is that what's happening? We're seeing it kind of trickle out this way because it's taking time?
I don't know if that's it. I mean, you do see this. I'll note, I mean, I think this goes back to August of 2016, this scheme here. And certainly they've been going through these. They've been listening the whole time. It's not clear. I think some have wondered if some people here may be cooperating or not. It's really not. You know, they had until the end of next week to bring this. But you're right. I mean, it's been months now since Burke was charged, and it's not exactly clear what's taken
so long. I know that this may not be quite the indictment that people were hoping for based on the rumors that was out, the chatter that was out there. And you know, this doesn't mean this is going to be the be-all, end-all. You know, we could see more later down the road. There's plenty to dig into right now, but
there is.
It's not clear what took so long. There could have been negotiations by defendants, trying to work out some kind of deal. Hard to say.
There's also the belief that if there are that many hours of secret recordings over that period of time, that there may be other people who potentially are guilty of wrongdoing in this case, and that we'll hear more names. But does it surprise you that the feds kind of split this up? We heard about Alderman Burke and being in trouble a few weeks ago, months now? And now today we see these more detail and more charges. Some of them add on to the Burger King alleged shakedown that we had heard about before. The new developer situation with the old main post office is new. And there are some other new things, like you said, with the Field Museum. Just sort of breaking it down, do you imagine that we're going to start seeing more and more as the days go by?
I mean, we may be. It's early to tell now that we have this. What's going to happen next? I mean, obviously we've got arraignments and stuff next week, and we'll be watching to see how lawyers respond to this. But as far as new allegations, it's hard to say. I mean, they certainly have a lot to work with. I think there's probably more out there. It may depend on what some of these guys decide to do, who decides to plead guilty, who decides not to. I'm not exactly sure why they decided to trickle it out this way. I'm not sure why they decided to launch this with the raid in November and the criminal complaint when they needed clearly some more time to get this together. I don't know. It's kind of been like one of these, it's probably like we're slowly seeing the pieces come together, and we're getting more of the picture now, but it's still hard to see the whole thing yet.
You know, you alluded to something earlier, the racketeering charge. You typically hear, having covered these, is that you hear this in relation to mob things, organized crime, cartels. You don't typically see that type of a charge here. Is it unusual for you to see that?
Yeah, I think it is. And I've spoken at least to one person who says it is. And I'll tell you just that I've been over here about 4 years now. In my experience, you're right. I mean, this is usually a mob charge. I've seen it with street gangs. I mean, we had a big street gang trial a few years ago. We've had others. The street gang is the enterprise. That's who you usually see in that slot. Now we're seeing the city of Chicago as the criminal enterprise, which is really striking.
Yeah, it's a day in history for sure.
What a phrase.
And for his part, Alderman Burke, have you contacted him, I imagine? Has he been speaking?
Yeah, we've reached out to his attorney. We haven't heard back. Of course, it's you're right. It's important to say. I mean, he has his adamantly said he's not guilty. He denies wrongdoing. Charles Quay has also pleaded not guilty when he was originally charged. We haven't heard back from his attorney yet either, we haven't heard from Peter Andrews yet, but yes, it's important to say that at least so far Burke and Quay has denied wrongdoing, and we haven't heard from Mr. Andrews yet.
All right, John Seidel from the Sun-Times. Follow him on John Seidel. He's great. You're great to follow on Twitter. I really appreciate your work. It's SEIDEL. Thanks, John. So you have it's a little more detailed from what we were describing earlier.
To suggest, it's amazing to think that the benefit, the criminal enterprise in the indictment, which usually is a street gang, like you said, or mob,
right.
It's the city of Chicago. I mean, I get what they mean. They mean that he was using the city of Chicago to benefit, but that's a weird phrasing to put the city of Chicago in
the
that,
city
in
of
that
Chicago,
category.
Not Alderman Burke either. It's sort of, if you wonder who else potentially might be tied to this, and more to come, I'm sure. Yeah. Let's find out what's happening bottom of the hour in the WGN radio news. And for that, we'll head over to Kim Gordon.
Mayor Lightfoot expressing her opposition to a bill that would raise the restaurant tax in some areas of the city.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Justin Kaufman in studio with us. Thank you for being here all week, Justin. It's fun working
for
with you.
You guys, it's so great to be a part of this show, and I appreciate the invitation. And I know it's under circumstances, sad circumstances,
for
with
Ro,
Ro's dad.
His dad passing.
But yeah, I enjoy being a part of this crew. You guys have run a tight ship.
Well, you're fun to be with, and this is it's been a breaking news kind of rock and roll sort of afternoon with everything happening with Jesse Smollett and the document dump there.
We didn't
even
really get
into
that.
We didn't. And it doesn't surprise us because we all know about the hoax.
Yeah.
But there are some
details. I'd say give that story 18 to 24 hours when the reporters actually dig through all that stuff. There will be some juicy details.
There are some unbecoming things about Jesse in there that go beyond his ability to stage fake hate crimes.
Yeah. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
When he saw the lineup, one little nugget from there, when he saw the lineup of the Nigerian American brothers, he said, "It can't be them. They're black as sin," acting like you've never seen them before. And of course, we now know that he knew them very well and had worked with them on rubbing their knuckles up against his skin so that he would look like he had been beaten up and a number of other details.
I cannot wait till there is a day, and this is what I'd run on if I were running for mayor, if I started my campaign for the next session.
Let's hear it.
I cannot wait till there's a day that the words Jesse Smollett are not mentioned in casual conversation in Chicago. And the crowd would go crazy and be like, yeah.
Good
I'm
luck.
So done with that dude.
Yeah, well, the city's still suing him, remember, to recoup fees. So that's going
to
go on for a while, and there's some other things.
Away.
Yeah. I think he wants to go away. I do. Yeah. I really do. And then we've got the Alderman Burke, of course. We were just talking with John Seidel at the Sun-Times about that. And you know what? Aside from the charges, and we just discussed the indictment, I think it's always a sad day in Chicago when you just start reading about the way things have been done here. And it's certainly not in the best interest of people. It's not in the best interest of citizens. It's in the best interest of politicians who have profited off the system in general. I think we're finally fed up to the point where we've elected this new mayor who's all about reform, and people don't want to take this anymore. And not that we ever liked it before, and we sort of knew it was always, we were talking about this earlier, we knew it was part of the system. Now it's like, come on.
Listen, I mean, it's the Chicago way, and it's been something that has been used and weaponized against us politically in this country. The others will point that out and continue to point out Chicago style of corruption. Well, here it is on paper in front of you, an indictment, an alleged, obviously these are alleged
allegations,
incidents, but the idea that this sort of shakedown, pay to play, you pay me so I can get things done in the city. This is the basic definition of the Chicago way. And a good thing to come out of this is that if they are true and there are punishments for this, this is a good thing for Chicago and a good thing for the political system that it's not being tolerated.
Right. That seems like a new day. Right. So we'll see what happens there. There is definitely more to come there from the feds and as we said, there's going to be an arraignment, and the court proceedings begin now that this indictment, and he's been named officially as a defendant, his top aide as well. So we'll track that. Well, you want to talk a little White Sox as we walk up to the White Sox pregame show.
We didn't get a chance to talk. Obviously, they're playing the Indians tonight. They got a four-game set at guaranteed rate. They had such a poor showing last weekend in Minnesota. They got swept there. There was a lot of feeling that they'd be demoralized moving on, that this would be a difficult stretch at the end of May, beginning of June, after such a poor showing in Minnesota. But they came back and they swept the Royals right out of Chicago, and they have a chance here with a four-game stretch with the Indians to make some hay. And I mean, the Minnesota Twins are running away with the division. There's no doubt about it. They might be even better than even advertised. But the idea that the Chicago White Sox, who are rebuilding, can gain some ground on the Cleveland Indians and be in a position where they could be seriously contending for a second place and an outside shot at a wild card is way better than many White Sox fans expected.
Well, I want to ask you that because if you thought that we could be here now, back when we were all moaning during the rebuild, like, oh, come on, when is it going to just come together?
Yeah.
Would you be satisfied with how long it's taken to get where we are now?
The satisfaction comes from the seeing players that are actually developing into what potentially all-stars. And I think of Yoan Moncada, who is the third baseman for the White Sox, who came over in the Chris Sale trade 2 years ago. He played the first 2 years. Last year, he came three strikeouts short of breaking a Major League Baseball record for strikeouts in a season. This was last year. They were talking about him being a bust. for him to turn around and have the season he's having, where he is an impact player, and he is, to me, he's a potential all-star. He has turned it around that quickly. He doesn't strike out at all anymore.
Wow.
And then you think of Lucas Giolito, who last year led the complete American League in ERA. He had a 5.40. I mean, led in the worst way. He had the worst ERA as from a starting pitcher. A 5.40. Something terrible. To see that in the last seven starts, he's, I think he's 6-1. Since he came off the DL, or the IL, they call it now, he is 6-0. And he's another candidate for an All-Star game. And he came over in the Washington Nationals trade with Adam Eaton. So to see those players develop and to have them already have taken their lumps and to now becoming stars, if you will, young stars, quicker than anticipated, I think that's a very, very good thing. That's something to be very optimistic about as a White Sox fan. Now we just need to see the other players kind of come together. We know what Jose Abreu can do. We'd like to see Eloy Jimenez actually start hitting the ball down there. But he's a rookie, and we'll figure that out. But it's exciting to see some of those players actually develop like we were told they were going to.
So I think it's 98 days now till the Bears play the Packers opening game. Not that anyone's counting or anything, but it should be a very exciting season. Pretty cool to see Khalil Mack say he wants to play even better next year.
What a player.
And I know, it's incredible. I mean, here's a guy who made the top 100 Bears players of all time in his first season with the
first
Bears.
First season.
And he's like, I'm not, you know, I mean, last year was nothing.
This guy has the potential, if he's not already on his way, but if he has a follow-up season to what he did last year, he will be the biggest star in Chicago.
Unbelievable. He's just so exciting to watch the whole team. I'm just very excited about the year ahead.
A defensive star, a linebacker on the Chicago Bears, being the best linebacker in football, lights out superhero-like stuff on the football field. Dude is going to be a Chicago star. He already is, no doubt about it. You see
his jerseys.
52 everywhere, but if he does it again, and he does it in a way that takes the Bears, puts him on his back, and they maybe go further than they did and don't have to worry about kicks at the end of the game, this town's going to be like, Mayor Lightfoot, we love you, but we may be like Mayor Mack.
Last I checked with Kevin, we're still worried about kicks at the end of the game. We got to get that sorted out. Yeah. Mitch Trubisky, though, Matt Nagy was very, had really cool things to say about him, how the offense is totally coming together.
I
think he's got possibility. I think he's, you know, it's the right time. It's like, if he starts to just ignite, it's like, wow, watch out. Anything could happen. And I just love our Bears.
The good news was that last year he had a brand new system with Matt Nagy.
Mm-hmm.
He was coming off of John Fox, so he had the learning curve. So to be in the same system in year two and have had success, it should be a great... If he develops and he gets to the next level where we start to see him at the level of
sky's the limit.
Mahomes. I don't know.
Watch out.
And it'll be fun. And the Bears play a lot of national games next year. It's going to be great.
We should also mention that the Blackhawks will be playing in Prague, and you listen in for your chance to win a trip for two. Tomorrow will be the last day of the week on our show in order to hear that sounder and be entered for your chance to win that trip. That would be incredible to get to do. And just for winning the day, you get a prize package that's really pretty cool. So congrats to all of our winners this week, and, you know, more to come. So stay tuned for that.